United Nations is welcoming the 5 billionth person alive in the world.
The White House today denies reports the U.S. sent weapons-related equipment to Iran as late as last month. The recent scandal at the PTL ministry are taking a toll on the credibility.
Kim Baker resigned as head of the PTL club.
Companies with between 50 and...
Local talk show that stimulates your mind and keeps you thinking about things going on in your world. From local issues to topics of global importance, Tracy and Friends keeps the conversation going. Call to talk to Tracy and Friends at 347-945-5229, 330-781-9600, or toll free at 1-866-530-WSOM. Listen online at tracyandfriends.com or at 600WSOM.com. And now, here's Tracy Winbush.
It might seem crazy what I'm about to say. Sunshine.
Hey, good morning, and welcome to Tracy and Friends here on WSOM AM 600. I don't know what I said, but my phone lines are already lit up. The number is 347-945-5229, and it's 6 minutes after the hour of 9 o'clock here on the 11th of February, 2014. And I want to make a very, very important announcement today. It is very, very cold outside, so if you're living here in Northeast Ohio, you want to bundle up before you go outside. Make sure your children are bundled up. It was unbelievable how cold it was for me to get here today. And I usually start my car, I was like, wow. And I guess they're telling me it's like only, let me make sure I have the right temperature. It is like something crazy outside. 4 degrees outside with an overcast. That's just really, really cold. Hey, the number is 347-945-5229. Let's see. Hey, good morning, California. You know how early it is out there? I guess she's just listening in. Hey, Chicago, good morning.
Good morning, good morning.
How are you this morning?
I'm great.
I have a guest coming on today, and I'm looking forward to talking with him. His name is Black Authority, and I don't know if he wants his real name out there or not, so I'll have to wait until he comes on. But he did a clip. He did a clip on YouTube, and he talked about, you know, how we spend our money, what we do, why we do what we do. And I'm looking forward to having this conversation with him. And as Black History Month, I said we were going to talk about Black History Month, but we were going to talk about real history. And I'm going to dig deep into this because I have major issues with the misalignment of our own priorities. So I'm looking forward to having that conversation. 661, your mic is on.
Black first, sister. This is Jason Black on the line.
Good morning. How are you, Jason?
Well, you were just talking about me, so I guess this is a good time as any to bring me in.
Absolutely, absolutely. How are you today? And thank you for accepting our invitation to come and hang out with us. We appreciate that.
Well, thank you very much for having me on.
Tell me a little bit about you, because, you know, Alabama is on. He's the one who actually introduced me to your video and made me play it one day. And before the day is out, we've got to play it because people really need to rethink what you were saying. Tell me, what made you really put that together and say, you know what, this is something crazy?
And, well, actually, this has been basically my life's work. What I've done is, over my life, I've really tried to take a look at exactly why it is that we as Black people are the poorest people in America and thus the world. And I've studied this my entire adult life. I'm an entrepreneur. I'm a business person. I'm a student of history. And throughout going through all those things, what I realized was that our problem as Black people isn't political. It's not social. It's not media. It isn't even education per se. The problem that we have as Black people isn't that we're not, you know, awake or conscious. You can be conscious and not doing anything. It isn't our lack of proper religion. Our problem as Black people is that we don't own or control anything. That's the basis of it. I can take somebody with a fifth grade education, and if he owns and controls something, I can make him a millionaire with his fifth grade education. And that's why you see these kids who are able to get their degrees in sixth and seventh grade. Learning something isn't that hard. Teaching someone how to apply it in an entrepreneurial way is the difficult part, and we've become a people who become averse to that. And that is the reason we are the poorest people in the world. And if we don't fix that, if we don't deal with that, forget politics and everything else, because everything else is fueled by your economy. If you don't fix this economic depression that we've been in for 500 years, nothing else is going to happen for you. And I mean nothing.
Now, when you say that, I mean, I look at, we don't, you're correct about us not, we don't make anything, we don't own anything, we don't, it's really amazing. And that which we did control, we don't control anything anymore. We don't even control our churches, I don't think. So how in the world are we going, how in the world would you suggest that we actually get into a industry right now? I mean, have you looked at my neighborhood now? What can we sell? We don't make nothing. We got a funeral home.
There is no black-owned or black-majority industry per se today. What we need to do is, I mean, first of all, it's not very hard at all. It's not like we don't have the numbers. We could engage in any industry that we want to, and I don't have a problem with that. Dr. Claude Anderson, who is the preeminent mind today, the single most informed individual today on black socioeconomics, said that what you need to do is find what your people are buying in. You need to find where your people spend their money. And we spend our money in a number of different areas. And the thing is, we ourselves have not been investing in that as producers. We've been investing in it as consumers. But it's not because we don't have the money to do it. We as black people have relegated ourselves. We put ourselves, as Carter G. Woodson said, we found the back door on our own. They don't have to show us the back door anymore. We're looking for one. And if there isn't one, we make one. So we have to get out of this mindset that we are born and bred and divinely predisposed and meant to receive our daily bread from people other than ourselves. That it's other people's job to own the business and run the business. It's just our job to fill out the application. And that's the extent of our responsibilities. In other words, we have to teach our children, because I don't know how much, I'm 37 years old, I don't know how much I can do with a 30-year-old who believes that somebody else from another community is supposed to give them the things they need to eat and drink and sleep and think for the day. I don't know what I can do with him. But definitely with our children, we need to teach them that you, it is your responsibility to own and control what is in front of you. Now, as far as what do you invest in, right now, making a crossover would not be that difficult. At the beginning of the 20th century, for example, one of my favorite social microcosms are Jewish people, because take a look at what they did over the course of the 20th century, including up to, including and after the events of the Holocaust in Germany. If you take a look at before that, they started in the movie industry and the publishing industry, particularly with comic books. And that was completely something that they had complete purview over. And even as other people began to encroach into it, they were able to keep their dominance in those industries. We as black people have been performers in the music industry. We've created every single American music form. Every single original American music form, we have created those, whether it be rock, R&B, the blues, rap, and we are highly influential even in country music in the creation of that, and thus bluegrass. Why is it that we have not moved over to the next step of ownership? Today, you don't even have to make physical media anymore. You don't have to make vinyl records and CDs any longer, and yet we still have excuses for why we don't own and control those. Why is it you're not doing it yourself? Marketing and promotion, is that your excuse? Well, you can buy your own radio and television time. Why do you need the record company? Young Guru did a wonderful video about that. He's a legendary music producer, and he said he doesn't get it. Why does he tell these young rappers that you can do it yourself? Kendrick Lamar and Top Dog Entertainment are a textbook example that you can own it and control it if you want to. And at that point, you only use the major record labels as a way to take it international, but at that point, you own and control your masters, your recordings, and everything else, like Death Row Records did under Suge Knight. So it's not – my answer to your question is we can get into any industry we want to. We buy all these shoes. We can move over into making them if we want to. Birdman did with his line of shoes. We could do it if we want to anytime we want to. The question isn't what can we invest in. The question is what do we want to, and why aren't we doing it?
Now, let me ask you this, because I agree. I want you to understand. I agree, because I actually own my own broadcast. What you're on right now, we own it. We broker the time, and we do what we do. But if I look, I come out of two great industries. I come out of the hair care industry, which we own, and I was there when we owned and controlled it. And I come out of the radio industry that we used to own and control. And when I look at the numbers right now, we don't have the – I don't know what happened to get us to cooperate. I mean, when you look at the hair care industry, which is a multi-billion-dollar industry, yet we don't buy into it, we don't own it, and getting back into that would be very, very difficult today. I don't know how we would get back to that, even though you've got to test on me to figure out how to straighten my hair or how to break my hair down or how to weave my hair in. I don't understand how we do that anymore. I mean, we've let so much time go through our hands and so much energy go through our hands. How do we go back and recoup that time?
Well, you don't recoup the time. All you can do is try to do the best that you can to regroup and reconstitute yourself where you are. We've made a lot of mistakes over the 20th century. The 20th century should have been an absolute breakout hit in the 20th century. And yes, we did make some progress, but most of that progress, as Dr. Claude Anderson has said, was social. We made social progress. We have not made socioeconomic progress. We had, you know, the Madam C.J. Walker Company. We had Summit Laboratories. And when you talk about the hair care industry. But today, those have been essentially overrun by the Koreans. And Korean people today, and the Koreans today are the single most innovative group when it comes to black hair care. There is nothing you're going to teach them about selling to the black hair care market. You're not going to teach them anything. They are at the cutting edge of any development you want to name, and they now have the capital and the ability to be able to take over any market that you want to refer to.
So how do I get back into that industry again? How do I do that when I go to major cities and I see Korean women doing black hair?
Well, there's two things that you have to do first. First of all, there are some minor inroads being made at this time. I mean, companies like Carol's Daughter are doing that kind of thing now. So it isn't that we've left it, but we've lost a lot of ground. We as black people, as a whole, as a group, we need to reestablish a code of conduct. Now, we commonly today we refer to this code of conduct as group economics.
Right.
And what that means is that for every dollar that you spend, you have a moral obligation to spend that dollar with a black merchant. Now, once you get that into your head, it will not be any problem whatsoever to build any industry that you want to. The reason why we as black people don't have a hair care industry anymore is because other people's money bounces anywhere from 6 to 18 times before it leaves their community. Ours doesn't bounce once. Once it hits a black hand, once your paycheck hits your black hand, that's the last time that dollar is going to touch a black hand.
That's correct.
We're basically a funnel back into the very communities and places that we get our money from. So that's what's causing your problem. You can get involved in any place you want to, but there's two things that are wrong. You do not have black people producing, and your customers are not abiding by a code of conduct that is necessary. I don't want to hear the excuses about what black merchants are not doing. It's a two-sided coin. We don't have enough black merchants, and we do not have customers abiding by a code of conduct. So we are going to have to start pulling each other's coat and pulling each other's collar. And the ladies, particularly, the black hair care industry should be 100% what it was 100 years ago, owned by black women. It should be 100% owned by black women. And it's not. And the reason for that is because black women do not uphold a code of conduct with each other. The single mother epidemic has taught you that. We do not uphold a code of conduct. So we need to stop being shy about pulling each other's coat and checking each other on saying, wait, hold on a second. Because if you live in California or Los Angeles, could you imagine a Latina walking past a Mexican restaurant to go and eat at a black one? I'm not saying that it does not happen, but what I am saying is, could you imagine that being the common thing? Her people would check her. Her people would pull her coat and say, what are you doing, sister? Don't you see this is your people's place over here, but I see you over with these people every day. They would check her on that. And we as black people want to make this, well, you do you stuff. You know what? You do you is fine when you're choosing a color of shoes. It is not fine when you're choosing where you buy those shoes.
Hey. Everyone faces challenges in their lives.
Sorry about that. My co-host is in studio right now, and Alabama, I see that you're on. How you doing this morning?
I'm doing fine. You didn't tell me it was going to be on. I was, took some time down today.
Alabama. You,
go ahead,
listen,
go ahead.
I said it yesterday, but you jumped off the phone too fast. Sorry. You just came in and you jumped off. So, you know, you can't yell at me because I said it, but you was in and out, you know, too fast. I can't help that. So how you doing this morning?
I'm doing fine. I mean, I really, man, I appreciate this guy, your guest, man. I mean, I really agree with most of, just about all his videos. And I'm a black conservative, so I know, I mean, he's made a few videos that may, you know, but I feel like everything he's saying is how I feel, especially the one about, what is it, black female, the reality of black female privilege. I mean, that is just gospel. Like, I showed that to my friend. A lot of people agree with this, and this guy is well thought out. He's, you know, real intelligent guy. He loves his history. I like some, I don't know if it was him, it was some videos about the Greek history. A lot of that stuff, man. I love this stuff he's talking about. I think this guy's well thought out. I think he needs a bigger platform because, and I think it's coming, but I'm a fan, man. I just want to say I appreciate what you do. And I, you know, as a black conservative, we don't all just hate black people. But like a lot of people may say, I think sometimes people just say stuff up and insult people, and they don't give us a chance to really hear outside of why we think. Because quite frankly, what you're saying, in my mind, is somewhat of a conservative, you know, cloth. But I know some people will say, well, you know, conservative, we don't want to hear that word. But I'm just saying, like, I ride with you, man. I agree with everything you're saying. I mean, even on the black church in a certain, I mean, I'm a Christian, but a lot of this, what you even said about the church, I agree with that. I mean, there are some things that that are being done that are ruining certain things about our society. So just keep doing what you do, man. I'm pushing for you.
Hey, listen.
Thank you very much, brother. I appreciate it.
My guest today is Jason Black, and if you want to go on to YouTube and type in Black Authority, you'll come up with quite a few videos and clips that he's put together. And Jason, you said that you've always thought this way. Where are you out of? And tell us a little bit about your history. Tell us a little bit about how, because you know you're thinking a little bit like way out the box on a lot of things.
Well, I live in Shreveport, Louisiana. So I've traveled around the United States most of my adult life, but this is what I call home here. And basically, this has just been the way I've seen things. I mean, I come from a family of people who have been self-employed and business owners. So that culture is something that I'm accustomed to. I'm not accustomed to the idea that you're supposed to work for someone else your whole life. I'm not accustomed to that. I'm not saying that someone can't work for someone else. I'm not saying that, but I'm just saying that you should be working for someone else as part of a plan. So basically that's just been part of our family's culture. To the previous caller that you had, though, Mr. Alabama, I'm not the one who made the black female privilege or the black Greeks videos. I just want to clear that up right quick. That's my co-host, Professor Black. He was the one who's done that. That's not actually mine, but I do have a number of videos myself, which you've probably seen some of those. I've talked to Marissa Alexander's husband and some other people. And we're getting ready to do a big documentary that will be coming up later this year, so please be on the lookout for that. But basically, it's been in the DNA of our family that, you know, we don't do that. We don't have – your plan should not be to work for other people. You work for other people until you get your plan off the ground. And once again, this goes back to the culture of black society, that we used to have this in our culture. We got derailed back in the 60s with integration. Integration was where we got derailed at. And right. We got it into our heads that it was our holy mission to force white people and white society into giving us something. And once you, with integration, what you really did, that was actually the White Social Economic Empowerment Act was what integration was. Because what it did was it created a culture in black society where we told ourselves that spending money with them was as good as spending money with us, and we didn't take any notice whatsoever to the fact that the local businesses in the black community were disappearing and vanishing overnight. We took no notice of that whatsoever. But let me tell you something, they did. And that's exactly
you know what?
The reason.
go ahead. I'm sorry. I didn't want to interrupt.
There you go.
I said the same thing. I said the exact same thing. And a guy by the name of Covina Man was like, well, what are you saying? If we go back into integration, then they're going to start printing money from the Federal Reserve and they're going to help all the white businesses and we're just going to suffer. As if, and I was like, no, that's not what I'm saying. Is this, could you expound on that? Because maybe you can do it better than I can.
Okay, well, first of all, when I ask a black person about our socioeconomic issues, as soon as they say the words Federal Reserve, I basically click and tune them off. When somebody says something like that, because what you're basically saying is that you're basically saying that you've created a mythical monster, and they're raising that as an excuse. They're not raising it
Absolutely.
As a solution. They're just saying that, well, there's the Federal Reserve. If the Federal Reserve disappeared tomorrow, they would say the Department of Commerce. If the Department of Commerce disappeared tomorrow, they would say the House or Senate, a place that they've never seen and never been. So they're not raising it because it's a legitimate argument. They're just raising it as whatever mythical placeholder name for whatever fanciful demon, whatever boogeyman you want to create or name it. Fill in the blank here as for why I'm not going to do anything for myself. Now, do you notice you've never heard Arabs use that line. You've never heard Asians use that line. You've never heard Orientals use that line. And today we need to separate the two, Asians from Orientals. You've never even heard Hispanics or Native Americans use that line. You've never heard them say something like that. Oh, yeah, what do all those groups have in common? They own and control what they have, and they practice group economics.
And they don't care what other people think.
Their communities, you know when you are in the Latino part of town. I don't care where you are in America. If it's a major metropolitan area, you know when you are, you know where the Chinatown is. When I was going through Philadelphia, it's on the freeway. They've got signs on the freeway saying this exit to Chinatown. And as Dr. Claudette has always asked, can you please show me where the freeway exit sign is to Blacktown?
Yeah, I can. When you drive through it, you know what it looks like.
Well, and that's the problem. When they say take us to the black side of town, that's become synonymous with the poor side. Forget about crime and everything else. Crime is a social result of your economy. When you say the black side of town, that's a euphemism for the poor side of town.
And lock your doors.
And that's the problem. So the issue is not the Federal Reserve. The issue is that we as black people, we were doing just fine before you had any of this stuff. We had our greatest economic progress from the Emancipation Proclamation until 1930. We had our greatest socioeconomic progress in this country during that time under Jim Crow and segregation. It doesn't get any tougher than that. So what?
Hey, Jason, I got to take a break. I'll be right back. You're listening to Tracy and Friends.
Hey, leave the mic off. Go ahead, bro. Hello?
Hello, Black Authority. You still there?
Yes, I'm still here.
Yeah, go ahead, man. You're making a good point, man. I feel you 150%, man. And, like, I just feel like it's sometimes, man, when people say stuff in the black community, it's people just contrarian just to be contrarian. I think
it's counterproductive.
Yeah, they just, I got to disagree with you. Even though that makes – group economics makes perfect sense. Nobody, Marcus Garvey, I've heard Martin Luther King, I've heard Malcolm X, they all stated the same thing in a certain way. And when you say it, it's like, I disagree. If that happened, then the white people are going to do this. If that happened, then the white people are going to do this. I'm like, man, look, man, I don't see that. I just don't. I feel you, man.
Yeah, when it comes to black economics, we are our own worst enemy, it seems like.
Well, black economics is not just a good idea, it's essential. I mean, you know, for our people to say that black practicing group economics is a good idea is the same as saying, you know what, I think breathing today is a good idea. Well, it's not a good idea, it's essential. You're going to have to do it or you're going to stop being part of this conversation.
Can I ask you a question?
Yeah.
I'm sorry, man. I didn't mean to cut you off, man. I'm about to go into work in a minute. I want to ask you a question. What do you think about some of these NBA players like Stephon Marbury some years back? He manufactured some shoes. He was selling them for like $30. It only cost him $5. I felt like, and this is just my personal opinion, I feel like with black people, we brag about what we consume instead of what we produce. So he probably would have came out better selling those shoes for $125 instead of trying to sell them for $30, because we don't think there's any value in them unless we pay $100-something. So we can look at another black person and put them down about it. That's the only way he's going to be successful, even though they're only $5 shoes, just like LeBron. What do you think?
You got a good point there. This was we don't understand our market as black people. We don't understand it. We live in it. We work in it. We converse in it. But we don't actually understand the black market. And isn't it amazing? Because we are black people. And most of the time, we don't understand why it is that we as black people do the things we do or consume the way we consume. And that's an amazing thing. But I think there's a very valid point to be made for that. Case in point, FUBU. FUBU didn't try to sell their stuff at a discount. You know, they sold it for this enormous markup because they understood that black people, you know, don't value something unless it's expensive. We buy things based on status. So they understood their consumer. They understood their customers. And anybody who wants to go into business with black people or for black people needs to understand that these specific consumers think about buying things in a totally different way than every other demographic does. You can't approach them the same way that you do whites or the same way that you do Asians. It's not going to work.
Did you do the video about the, talking about Issa Rae show Walking Dead? Did you do that video? Because I watched that video. Wow, I really liked it. About first you were talking about how to get a camera, how to do lighting. Was that you?
Yes, that was me.
Yeah, man, that's a great video, man. Let me ask you a question. How could you generate some wealth? Let's say if I did do that and I had a lot of views on YouTube, and how would that generate some sort of revenue? Like, even though I'm ignorant in that regard. So how would you do that?
Well, first of all, you need to have a plan.
Hey, we're back, and you're listening to Tracy and Friends here on the SOM AM 600. It's 33 minutes after the hour of 9 o'clock here. And the number is 347-945-5229. In studio with me is Jeff, and I have a gentleman on the phone with me. His name is Jason Black, and he's also known as Black Authority on YouTube. And I want to thank Alabama for introducing me to his videos. And I brought him on because I wanted to hear what he had to say. And I wanted to have a conversation with him and then bring him into our audience and into our dialogue, because he's not saying anything that we don't say every day. And we say it a little bit differently because I do think politics, you know, y'all know, I think politics is the crux of all things. And unless you do both things at the same time, then you lose all things at all times. That's just my philosophy. And, you know, we've talked about Dr. Claude Anderson, and we've talked about having group economics and in our own community and actually being able to build right there on the chair. And being able to build, being able to grow. And I've got to ask Jason, how in the world do we begin to change the paradigm and to change the mindset so that people will realize that they no longer have to get a hand out? All they need is a hand up and go work for themselves, get their hustle on. What do we have to do to make that happen?
Okay, I want to answer that question. I want to answer that question before I do. I want to address what you just said, because you said that you consider politics to be the crux of all things. Now, let me be very, very clear about this. I am not anti-education, and by education, I mean schooling, because there's a difference between education and intelligence.
That's correct.
I am not anti-education. Okay, let me be very clear about that. I have a degree myself. I'm not anti-education. I am not anti-politics. I don't have a problem with politics. I understand the reason for politics. The problem is most black people don't.
Okay.
Most black people do not understand the purpose and the reason for education. They do not understand the purpose and the reason for politics, and because of that, they're both wasted on black people. That's the problem. It's wasted on black people because they don't understand what it is, what it does, and why it's here. And furthermore, you are not going to be able to get anything done in politics without an economy. You can go vote all you want to. Your vote is worthless and useless if you do not have an economy. Why is that? First of all, we go into this in depth in our documentary, which will be released later this year. But to make a long story short, racism is not a social problem. Racism came into existence and exists today for economic reasons. And black people do not understand this. We think that racism is somebody not liking you because of the color of your skin. Racism is the practice, the institutionalized practice of one group withholding power, wealth, and resources from another group based on their skin color. Not one group not liking another group of people based on skin color. It goes back to power, wealth, and economics. In politics, you can't control politics without money. Why is that? Because what is politics? Politics is the social construct whereby which you make the decision to divide the wealth and resources of a society. Well, if you don't have any wealth and resources, guess what? You don't get to participate in that conversation. I don't care how much voting you do. You don't get to participate because you don't own anything. So it goes back to that again. So how do we – what you're essentially asking, your next question is how do we wake up people? What you're doing right
I'm,
now.
I'm sitting here because, you know, listen, I'm watching and I'm listening to you and I'm like, wow, this is so good. And I'm on a small station in Youngstown, Ohio. You know, we stream on iHeart. We do what we do on the Internet. We stream on Blog Talk. We do all that kind of stuff. But then – you know, I look at the masses, and I'm looking at Roland Martin, and he's doing the, you know, he's bigger than me. And I look at Al Sharpton, and they're bigger than me. They got this platform, and they're all about they're the voice of the black people, so they say. But I don't hear you. Have they called you yet?
I'm going to have to plead the fifth on that answer.
Okay.
For a number of very good reasons, but I will say it to you like
okay.
this. Okay.
I just need to know why aren't you on the Arsenio Hall show having this conversation?
Because I haven't done enough yet at this point to put this at the forefront. You have to understand, they are responding to what they think it is their core audience wants. Al Sharpton is on a network that is owned by the second largest.
And we're listening. He's gone. Wow. It just dropped it. The call dropped. Hey, the number is 347-945-5229. I'm going to take a Matt, your mic is on.
Well, you were just about ready to take a break there, Tracy.
I was going to take a break, but I saw that you came in. I want to say hi to you.
Hello, Tracy. Hello, guys.
Good morning.
How are you this morning? I'm good. Except for the cold and the lack of sunshine, I'm doing all right.
Yeah, we're missing a lot of that, aren't we?
Yeah. I was going to have a comment for your guest, but apparently the gremlin got into the works there and dropped him. So I'll see if he calls back.
Hey, go ahead, Alabama.
I was just gonna say he has a video about owning your own media company. And I think you may like that because I know you've done some stuff. You're in media. And, I mean, this breaks down, like, how to start something. He's talking about The Walking Dead, the quality of it, what it would take to accomplish the same thing. This female by the name of Issa Rae, who has an area on YouTube or what is it, the channel, and she's talking about Awkward Black Girl and all these different channels and stuff that she has. And I went, ever since he said that, because I didn't even know about these people, a lot of these people have gotten millions of views, and they're generating revenue. Now, I was in the process of asking him how, because I don't know how to do it. But I live in Montgomery, Alabama. Well, that's where I'm from. And there's this university got this big drama department. They put out a lot of celebrities that come from there, black people from there that's in Hollywood now. So I'm just trying to see what, I got a lot of kids I know that will probably come in and do stuff for next to nothing. But how and what do I need to do to generate that sort of, how would it make money, basically? And I think he knows. That's why I wanted to try to ask him that.
Well, listen, I'll be right back. I'm going to take a break. You're listening to Tracy and Friends here on WSOM AM 600. The number is 347-945-5229. We'll be right back.
Here it is, everybody's favorite time of year, income tax time.
Hey, Alabama, you still there?
Yeah, I'm here.
What was that guy's name? I got into the middle of it.
Jason Black. Jason Black. I listen to him. There's a guy named Black Truth Forever, Black Authority, and another one I listen to, Black Education Radio. There's three of them that I really subscribe to. There's another guy called Goku something. But I watch all their videos. They're pretty good. I agree with most of what they're saying. I mean, it's not, you know, and I think white people, when they hear this, it's frightening to certain people because they think that it's more so like a let's empower and then go out and kill white people. We're not. It's not about that. It's about just basically doing what other people do. It's nothing that's going to harm anybody. It's just understanding if we really believe, if conservatives say they really believe in capitalism and free enterprise, then they should all be for this. Because it's the same thing. It's just taking that attitude and applying it to the black community so that they can be empowered and not have to go to the government like Malcolm X said, begging for, you know, Malcolm X, he said, he goes out, he gives you food, clothing, shelter, and then you have the nerve to get upset with him when he tries to control your life. I mean, well, what do you expect? I mean, you're going in the government, you're getting everything from the government, you're getting everything. You know, Al Gore the other day was saying, we need to start looking at population control, he said management, in Africa. Don't get upset when they try to, you know, and people, there's certain ways people think. I mean, you have to kind of be mindful of this stuff. But I'm going to get off my soapbox.
Well, no, I mean, you're right. This is something that that I've said, you know, since I started listening to the show, and I wanted to, tell Mr. Black there that he's doing a service, not just for the black community, but for, for everybody as a whole, for white people especially. There's a lot of white people that aren't racist, but they don't know what's going on. You know, their mentality is the past is the past. Let's leave it in the past and move forward. That was my mentality before I started listening to the show and really getting a grasp of what, you know, the obstacles and the dominoes that need to fall and in what order. And people like this, and people like Tracy and people like you, Alabama, because you have a lot of good points, like we've talked about this reintegration or this integration thing, it's something that it opens the eyes to the entire, to everybody, as far as why and how to understand what's going on. So I don't see it as a threat to white people in any way, shape, or form. I see it as something that it brings everybody together to do what America is supposed to do.
He basically said it was rigged. That's what he said, that right? The politics game was rigged.
Say it again?
No, that's not what he was saying.
I said that he basically, I said Jason Black basically said the politics game was rigged. That's what he basically said.
What he was saying is what people don't understand about politics. Yeah, he's saying, like, with Dr. Claude, he got a video on his channel where Dr. Claude was like, there's three prongs to it. The first prong is economic, control the wealth in your community. The second prong is then you buy the politicians, but you have to have money to buy politicians. Then he's saying the politicians that you buy affect the laws. He says, but before you can get to the third one, you have to go through the first two. And the first one, the foundation is having wealth. So that's what he was saying. So I think he's saying that you can't get up to the table. You got two people, both of them have a vote, but this guy got $200 million. You got $5.
News Talk 600.
Which guy's going to get what he wants?
WSOM.
Hey, we're back, and you're listening to Tracy and Friends here on WSOM AM 600. The number's 347-945-5229. Jason Black was on with me, and somehow I've lost him, so I'm trying to see if I can get him back up. I just texted him and see if he can pull him back in. Again, the number's 347-945-5229. Jeff is in the studio with me. Hey, Jeff, how you doing today?
I'm doing great. How are you?
What he said was very, very impactful.
Am I bobbing your needle over there?
Yes, you are. Mm-hmm. What he said was very, very impactful, and it is true. My question is, how do we get this message out and we start reshaping and retraining and reforming minds?
Well, what I like about what he said is he said you need to go ahead and start doing your things economically. Because when you do economics first, then you are opening yourself up to being able to control other things. And that's absolutely true. And those of us that work in politics, that doesn't mean we're not supposed to do what we do.
You do both.
Yeah, we can. Everybody should do both. And those that are not involved in the politics should be involved with the building of black economic power.
Because when I look at the set-aside program,
mm-hmm.
you know, and the goods and services, and you only make up 2% of the trades when you have the set-aside programs in the state, that says something.
Right.
That means you're not participating.
Right.
What'd
you say?
Okay, so he was saying that to get into politics or to empower yourself or all that, that you need to have some, you basically need to have some economic, you need to be up there economic-wise, but you don't think that if you try to empower yourself or when you try to get to that level, that those same groups that are on top are going to try to stop you and find loopholes to stop you before
it's
you
okay.
get to gain some power?
But you know what? You're gonna find, they're going to try to, yes, people are going to try to stop you because business is business and money is money. But those are called obstacles that you just have to overcome. You just don't stop because somebody doesn't want you to make any money.
And it's not necessarily because your skin is dark.
It's just about dollars.
It's about dollars. If the new restaurant comes and sets up on the corner across from me, I'm in competition. I don't care what color the person is. I'm in competition for my life. And so, therefore, I have to go and do what I have to do.
But he also said, you know, and I believe this to be true, he also said about, you know, it is a, you have to have group economics, you know, the people around you have to actually want you to be successful so that they don't walk past your restaurant, but they continue to come go into your restaurant, not go into the one that's across the street by someone else. And that's something that we have to learn. Not so blind, Mike. Your mic is on.
Hey, good morning, Tracy.
Good morning.
I'm sitting back listening. I was listening to the wisdom from Brother Jason there. And I got to call him Brother Jason because he thinks like I do and he thinks like you do and stuff. It's about empowering people. Nothing else matters. And, Jeff, I agree with you. Just because they try to stop you, you're right, it has nothing to do with skin color. Trust me, there are plenty of people that Bill Gates tries to stop of all colors. You know, if he sees them as competition to Microsoft and Jobs over at Apple and all those people, you know. You know, if you think what you have a buck in your pocket, your problems have gone away. No, they haven't. They've just begun because now you're in a more elite group, a smaller number of people who know who you are, know everything you're doing, and try to stop you twice as much than they ever did before when you were nobody. You know, so I agree with you on that.
Hey, 469, your mic is on.
Okay.
Is that Jason?
How you guys doing? No, it's not
good.
Jason.
How are you?
I'm friends with Jason on Facebook. Anyway, it's good to hear black conservatives really speak on black issues because some that I faced on the social scheme of Facebook is that it's like a lot of, you know, one sister said, a lot of black conservatives, you know, she says, I see why a lot of blacks go ahead and go Democrat because the black conservative movement sometimes doesn't want to really address the black issues. And they try to, you know, act like, oh, it never existed. Oh, it's over. When brothers like Jason Black and people like yourselves are actually talking about it, you know, and I'm just glad that, he put the link on Facebook. So I just chimed in and, you know, you guys are really, doing the things because, I mean, man, I've been screaming and yelling this for the longest time. I mean, I've even had white conservative friends get mad at me and say I'm too militant, I'm too this, and it's like, look, I'm not going to stray away from what's happening in my community. I mean, 70% of black babies are born to single mothers. You know, 60% of black young males are dropping out of high school. You know, 45% of black women have HIV or some form of STD. You know, the leading cause of death of black men is other black men. I can't stray away from that. You know what I'm saying? And I think that's mainly the problem. You know, and then also, you know, economically, like Brother Black was saying, you know, many of us just wasn't taught to be entrepreneurs. We were taught to go to college, get a good job, and you're set, you know. And so, you know,
That's what Democrats taught us.
Yeah. And I think, you know, like I said before, most blacks don't even know that prior to the 60s, it was almost unheard of for a black to be Democrat. You know, we are naturally a conservative people. You know, Frederick Douglass was conservative. Booker T. Washington was conservative. The founder of Black History Month, Dr. Carter G. Woodson, was a Republican. You know, people, these are facts that people don't even know, you know, because they are being told from the liberal slave masters what to think, how to think, way to do things, you know. And I think that, you know, it's time for us as black conservatives to speak out about this stuff, you know. So
yeah, because
hey, listen, I'm trying to find Jason, so give me just a moment because he's back in here. I've got a lot of calls in the loop, and I don't know
Put me on mute. That's fine. You can put me on mute.
No, not you. I'm talking about a whole bunch. I've got about 20 calls in the queue, and I can't find Jason in here because the number is not the same. So, Jason, when I pull you up, just yell.
You have the right line.
Do I have the right line yet?
You mentioned.
Yes, that's the right line.
Okay. Go ahead.
It seems like everything that you mentioned.
Yes.
But it seems like everything that he mentioned, though, is being blamed on conservatives, and that's not true.
That's Eric.
Would you say Eric?
Well, I want to talk on that.
It seems
also.
Like all the issues that he talked about,
yes.
Democrats are blaming those problems on conservatives, and that's just not true.
But, you know, it's two-sided, and Jason's back up, so I'm going to let him answer it. But it's two-sided. It's not about they blame conservatives, they blame Republicans, but we have to have an independence and open up our eyes so that we can discern what's good for us no matter what. Because progressives are progressives, and they come in all shapes, colors, and sizes.
Yeah, but most of your problem is
absolutely.
The liberal progressives.
Absolutely, absolutely, I agree with that.
And so that's why I agree with Eric was saying.
And I agree with that. But what I'm saying is I don't want to demonize one side completely, because when you demonize one side completely, it throws a curve, like the other side does not play inside of it, because at times they do.
I got you.
I disagree with everyone.
Okay.
Not just on personal opinion, but because on historical fact. First of all, what the gentleman said before about Carter G. Woodson and Frederick Douglass and the Republicans, well, you know what, that's true. But, of course, after the Civil Rights Act, all those Dixiecrats switched over to the Republican Party, and the people who used to be those Republicans defected to become Democrats. Remember, Ronald Reagan used to be a Democrat and then became a Republican, and when asked why, he said, I didn't leave the Democrat Party. The Democrat Party left me. So we all need to remember, we can't just say one half of the 20th century. We need to speak on the second half of the 20th century as well. So the people that you used to know as Republicans are now sitting in what's called the Democratic Party, and the people you used to know as Democrats are sitting in the Republican Party. But you know what? None of that matters. And it's never, 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 ever mattered. And the reason for that is because these social terms that you've grown accustomed to, such as Democrat and Republican or liberal and conservative, those terms are irrelevant to black people. Those terms were not made by us, and they were not made for us. They were made for people and citizens of the dominant culture. But when you sit down and talk to these people individually, you start to find they sound the same. I put up a link a few days ago to Jerry Seinfeld, who said that he didn't care about the fact that people were criticizing him because he didn't have any black comedians on this recent comedy program he's put together. He said that he doesn't think about that kind of thing. Kind of makes you see now why he didn't move that far from Michael Richards. So much for your liberals. Your liberals sound a whole lot like your right, far right-wing conservatives. Third of all here, when you use that term conservative, for a black person to use the term conservative, as Dr. Anderson said it best and so eloquently, I can't improve upon it. When you say I'm a conservative, my first question to you is, what are you trying to conserve? What part of American history do you want to preserve and keep in its unfiltered, unaltered state? Because I can't think of very much of American history that I want to leave unaltered as far as my people are concerned. So those terms for me are irrelevant. Malcolm X said he doesn't identify with any of them because they're irrelevant to us. What we need to focus on
is socioeconomic empowerment, because if you do that, it won't matter whether you're sitting with Democrats or Republicans. It won't matter whether you're sitting with liberals and conservatives. It won't matter whether you're sitting with humans and Martians. You will be the most powerful people in the room, and it doesn't matter what's going on outside that door. You will still dominate the landscape and be able to preserve yourselves.
Black Authority, I do want to say one thing, because I'm going to agree to disagree with you on this. It absolutely makes a difference, because you have to understand that we as black people tie in so much with one side that we have totally wiped ourselves out of being significant right now. And I'll say it like this. The reason why it does matter is because you only had two or three Republicans become Dixiecrats. The rest of them started agreeing with the Republicans because of Johnson's Great Society programs, and they voted that way. They did not want to go into liberalism and progressivism, in which Johnson wanted to expand that war, and that's why he had to do civil rights, because he didn't want to, because he said right afterwards, we'll lose the South, but them niggas will vote for us for the next 200 years. It matters. And so therefore, since we do have those of us that work in the political realm, as well, we have to have a honest opinion, because all far right conservatives are not racist, and all progressives aren't racist. But the progressive monologue is absolutely racist, as they destroy our people economically, they destroy our people with abortion, and they destroy our people by marginalizing their power, because they tell them stuff like, that far-right people, they don't like you. It's a lie. We work with the far-right people. We know there are some that don't like you, and there's some that welcome you, and some that don't give a hoot. So that's why that's important.
Well, my question would be, if you're going to call yourself conservative, what part of American history are you?
It's not about history. It's about a system that works called capitalism.
Okay.
It's not about history.
I don't like when black people say, don't tell me that I want to go back to slavery. That's just ridiculous, and that's not true.
Well, tell me which part of the American system you wish to conserve.
The part that you just mentioned earlier.
Alabama, hold on, dog. The part that says that you can start a business and you can make the money and you don't have the government in every single part of it taking your money away from you to do foolish things with it and pissing away down the drain. That's what
don't
we
even
want.
Exist
we want
anymore,
an open
though.
System so that we can start a business. Right now, in the past 4 or 5 years, it's increasingly harder to start a business because of the overregulation that we're getting from the one side that our ignorant selves vote for all the time.
You're gonna start.
Right, you got a president telling you that you can't be successful unless you create a green job business, you know?
Okay, I don't know what business you're trying to start, but I haven't had any problems getting a business license for anything I've wanted. Unless you're trying to start a multinational conglomerate, I don't know what kind of business you're trying to start.
Well, listen,
I'm going to take a break. I'm going to leave the lines open. You're listening to me.
Jason.
Hey.
Jason, I got a quick question.
Yes, this is the young man who was asking before about people trying to stop you. Once again, if you are socioeconomically strong enough, it doesn't matter what reason they want to stop you for. It doesn't matter whether it's competitive. It doesn't matter whether it's economic. It doesn't even matter if it's racial. The point is, it's like football. You don't sit up and complain that the other team is playing better than you or has stronger players than you. You get your team good enough that it doesn't matter how good and how strong their team is. You are always better and more prepared. So the answer to your question is we've dealt with that a long time ago. You get your act together enough that it doesn't matter whether they don't like you because you're black or whether they want to stack the deck against you because you're black. Their reasons for stacking the deck become irrelevant once you become economically powerful enough. This is why I don't listen to and don't give any ear to conspiracy theories, because white society does not sit around trying to predict what conspiracies black people have against the white culture. It's like ants trying to make a conspiracy against a cinder block. It doesn't matter what the ants are conspiring to do. They're not going to be able to disintegrate that cinder block.
You want to make something that is the cinder block. So it doesn't matter what they come up with, whether you know about it, whether you don't know about it, that you are so incredibly powerful that they can't rock you no matter which angle they try to hit you from.
Mr. Black, Jason, could you expound on that part you were talking earlier about the I asked you and then she came back about the media company. Like, how would that be relevant? Like, how would that generate revenue?
Okay. The biggest problem that I've seen in dealing with other people in black media is they don't have a plan. Tariq Nasheed had a plan before he did Hidden Colors. He didn't just jump up and say, nobody else is making a documentary. Think I'll do this. He said, nobody else is making a documentary. Let me decide how I'm going to do this. He didn't just jump up and buy a camera and start interviewing people. He didn't just say, well, I'll figure out how I'm going to distribute it later. He worked all of that out before he got started. So that's the first thing is you need to have something resembling a plan before you do anything, which means you need to decide how you're going to monetize it. What the biggest issue that I've found is that people who get off into this kind of thing simply know how to buy a camera and nothing else, which is why I made the videos that I've made. If you do not have access to an audience to let them know what you're putting out, you're putting yourself at a huge disadvantage. So it's going to be up to you how you do that.
Let's say that happens and I get something, and let's just say, I know this is it's a lot that goes into that, but let's just say I do what you say and I got a lot of people interested. Where is the – I'm ignorant completely in this game as far as media. What happens once I'm getting all these views and people are posting it on Facebook? What happens then?
Well, this is the great media discussion of today. Basically, there are two ways that you charge people for something. You either charge advertisers and let your consumers watch for free, or you charge the consumers and do away with the advertisers. But that's the way that you do that. On YouTube, the way that works is AdSense, basically through Google, and they start the advertisers when somebody watches a commercial before your video plays. You can either do that, or you can sell your stuff directly to the people watching it and charge them directly.
So that's how Tommy gets paid on his videos, TJ Sotomayor. Like, a lot of his videos, he has commercials in front of him now.
Yes. If you're on YouTube and is playing a commercial, that person has signed up to become a YouTube partner. And that means that they get, like, I forget exactly how the formulation works today because I've heard of the discussion. I'm going to have to look into it. But it's like you get paid 0.003 cents per commercial that plays. So you have to get a very large view count on your channel in order to get paid off of it. But essentially, yes, that's the way it works.
Okay.
Yeah, but how do you
– you have some compelling content that's going to do that. I can't sell that short because if you're just getting 5,000 views, you're going to have to make something along the line of 10 videos a day for that to actually make any reasonable income for you.
Okay. All right.
How much money do you think you need to save?
It's totally unprepared for it.
Jason.
Yes.
How much money you need? You think you need to save in order to get to enough revenue where you could say, look, I have this amount of money, and I would like to use it to start a small business or a small idea. Like, you know, what's a good amount of money to?
That's basic entrepreneurship. The answer to your question is nothing.
Amen. Thank you, Jason. Thank you for saying that, Mr.
Now, you have to understand, black people have been totally, in the words of Cardi Woodson, miseducated about how economics work. We don't actually understand how it works. You do not go into business with your own money. You most preferably go into business with someone else's money. But black people don't believe in getting their credit together. We believe in buying shoes and buying cars that we can't afford and having our credit report look like a criminal rap sheet. And
what
that's
do you think about Mark Cuban?
Let me
Mark
get
Cuban
how much money I need to get together. So the first question is, yes, you want to have savings in the bank. You definitely want to do that. But using your own money should be the weapon of last resort. You should use your own money as a way of collateralizing to get money from someone else. That's most preferred. You only use your own money as a weapon of last resort. Now, I used my own money to finance my documentary, but that wasn't because I couldn't get a loan for it. It was because I did not want to get a loan.
Hey, we're back. It's Jennifer Tracy and friends here on WSOM AM 600. The number is 347-945-5229. I'm sitting with Jeff, and I got a guest on. His name is Jason Black, and he's also known as Black Authority all over the Internet. And I want to thank him for coming on. We agree to disagree on some things, but I have to say to the core of what he's saying and being on message as far as economics when it comes to African-Americans, he's spot on, in my opinion. I didn't bring him in here to agree with me, and as you guys know, I don't want everyone to agree with me, but I will have to say, but the brother does think, and you know, and I am all about making you think. We need to think about what we do, what we're doing, and that's why I coined today is, what are you thinking? Because he said something, hold on. He said something during the break that was very, very, he said that you don't have to go out and save a whole lot of money, but you can go out and begin to finance your own with other people's money so that you can have your own business when you handle your business properly. And I'm paraphrasing what he said, but it was very, very good. Who just called my name out? Who was that? Somebody just said Tracy, and I said, hold on, who was it?
Well.
Hello?
Okay,
Jason?
Yes.
I'm going to pull some calls in. I thank you for posting my show on your Facebook, because I have not seen this many calls in my queue, I think, since I've been on it. I've been on 7 years.
No. We've
been. No, I don't know, Jeff.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know. Hold on.
I've got a few friends.
You got a few friends? I see, because their friends are here. Let me go. Stanley, I think that's you. How are you this morning? Four six nine, your mic is on.
Oh, yeah, how you doing? I'm doing all right. Yeah, that's all I had to say. You know, I like I said, Jason Black is one of my friends on Facebook, and I agree with a lot of what he says, you know. And on the conservative tip, what he was saying, I may not agree with it, but it makes a lot of sense what he's saying. You know, those terms really wasn't meant for us. And when I say conservative, I mean in my ideology. I don't mean in trying to conserve anything about America, but I completely
right.
agree 110% what he's saying. I mean, you know, a lot of times, like I said before, this is one of the very few shows I've actually seen where quote unquote black conservatives actually deal with black issues, because I've been on shows with so-called black conservatives and they want to completely drown out the fact of black issues, you know, and like I said before, you know,
I can't do that.
Yeah,
I can't do
yeah.
that. I'm black in America. I can't drown out my problems because I have a political philosophy.
And I'm going to start looking now, because I'm just thinking that all of them are like us here in Ohio that are very interested in black issues. That we have a black organization to deal with that in the conservatives. And, there are issues. There are huge issues.
And I have to deal with them because my issues are different. And just because my political philosophy is one thing does not mean that I don't have my everyday life, and I need to deal with my everyday life and what is around me, where I live, what I see when I go to church in my own home, in my own family.
In my community.
Absolutely.
Tracy.
Yeah.
Tracy, Alabama. Jason Black, to me, kind of like Marcus Garvey. You know, Marcus Garvey had Malcolm
X. Alabama, sweetie. Let me go through these calls, because they've been waiting for a long time. I got a person on here that I need to pull up from 216 who's been waiting 17 minutes. Hold up, okay? 216, your mic is on.
Hey, how you doing?
Good morning. How are you?
I'm doing fine. Hey, I was just calling in, listening to Jason Black. I agree with a lot about the economics and things like that. I'm a conservative and things like that, and I do think that the conservative part, I'm a conservative, like, you know, by like meaning like family. It don't mean I'm a Republican, but I mean like family. You know, American values like family. You know, strong household. You know, a man leading a family, a man and a woman together. Like that's what a lot of people mean when they say conservative. You know, just like traditional things like that. Not like I'm a crazy Republican, George W. Bush Republican, things like that. because I don't agree with Republicans either, or the liberals by far, most definitely not a liberal. But I do think that the liberal or the Democratic Party has hijacked the black community in, like, a way that people never even seen before. I mean, black people, I mean, they vote, like, 97% Democrat. I mean, that's unheard of. Like, who does that? I mean, nobody does that. And it's like, with the abortions and things like that, since Roe versus Wade, I think, like, around 52% of black babies never was even born. I mean, and that's all Democratic funded. I mean, a lot of those things happen because of Democrats. And I just think that they, like, keep, like, black people trapped inside this mind where, oh, the Republicans hate you, things like that. And, I mean, it's not even like that. Because most conservatives I talk to that's, you know, not black, I mean, that's not black, you know, things like that, they actually nice people. Like, they, as long as you care about, you know, family, things like that, and you're just a normal person, you don't do crazy type stuff, like, it's cool. Like, I don't really see too many problems with them. With me, I see more racist liberals than anything besides, as far as, like, you would say conservatives. I mean, I just don't really see, like, where, how black people don't understand that. Like, it's not like, you know, conservatives are the ones destroying their communities. All the black communities are led by Democrats, and they all look like hellholes. I mean, they all look like Chicago. That's what a Democratic community looks like, Chicago. Everyone around the country, no matter where you go, if it's minorities and things like that, it's ran by Democrats, and it looks like a hellhole all around the country.
But this, you know, this comes from,
hold on,
Jason, I want Jason to chime in on this, cause, and I'm gonna say this before Jason says anything. This is because of the ignorance of people, because you can't allow, you allow people to manipulate you so that you don't pay attention to your local base, like your school board races and your mayor's races and your city council and your township trustees and your county commissioners and your judges. You don't pay attention to the laws. You're not proactive. And so you go out and vote, I'm a Democrat, and it's not, and you don't give anybody else any kind of leeway. And then you wonder why you're not getting anything done. Jason, what did you say?
That was me.
The problem is that we as black people vote ideologically. And that is the worst way to cast your vote for anything, is based upon your ideology. You are supposed to only vote for one reason and one reason only: what is in your best group interest. That is it. You do not, as the man said, we have no permanent friends, we have no permanent enemies, only permanent interests. Now, I've asked people several times here, well, what part of America do you want to conserve? Nobody here really wants to conserve it. They just want to conserve capitalism. And you need to learn the difference between conserving capitalism and conserving America, because you haven't had an American president in history, including the one in the White House now, who has not done everything in their power to enable the white supremacist structure. So
I agree with that.
There's not really a whole lot about America you want to conserve. For conserving capitalism has been around now for 400, 500 years. You're not conserving America. You're conserving capitalism. I don't have a problem with that. Now, as far as what you were talking about, Democratic strongholds being bad for black people, I would say that black people have made Democratic strongholds bad for black people. Because
that's correct.
If you go to states like Vermont, if you go to states like New Hampshire, you got plenty of white folk there living very, very well. What's the difference in Martha's Vineyard? Oh, they got their economic gang together. Whereas black people get together in a group and decide to sit down. Case in point, Detroit. It is absolutely inexcusable what black people, and I mean black citizens, have allowed to occur in Detroit for the last 30 years since Coleman Young. It is absolutely unconscionable what we have allowed to happen. We had Motown, we had the Big Three sitting right there, and did we flex our muscles? No, we did not. Benjamin Netanyahu, and I played the video, you can all go look it up online, he said himself, he stood right there in the United States Senate 2 years ago and said that Israel is a Jewish state. He said it four or five times. And yet black people, when being asked about cities that we are the dominant people in, we don't even want to use the word black. Forget saying it's a black city. We don't even want to say that we're black people. Adrian Fenty did that in D.C. Ray Nagin said it in New Orleans, and black folk were the ones caterwauling. Oh, are you sure we're a chocolate city?
that's what you're supposed to say. You don't see Asians and Orientals squeamish about telling you that you're in their neighborhood. As I said, they got signs on the freeway that tell you that you're entering Chinatown, and not only will we not say that we're in Blacktown, we don't want to say we're black. So we need to shed this historical shame and this historical ignominy that we've placed upon ourselves, that we refuse to identify ourselves as black people, because once you identify, what we're really doing is saying that we're non-persons. And once I say that I'm a non-person, that means I have no standards. No wonder I can have abortion clinics and liquor stores in every neighborhood. I have no standards for myself as a person because I refuse to define what I am as a person. We think black dollars are American dollars, and they are not. They are black dollars. What's good for America isn't necessarily good for black people.
That's
but we
true.
Refuse to define ourselves, and because we won't do that, we can't create a culture. You can't create a culture that does not have a definable parameter and a label. You can't do it. It's impossible. And that's why we're not making any progress. What we're doing here, you've got four or five black people on the line right now who are not afraid to identify themselves as black, not afraid to identify what's in our best interest, and not afraid to get up and actually do something about it. That's what economies and strong societies are built upon. Now, we can disagree on other things, but those become minutia if we can all, as long as we all agree that when it's time to cut the pie, it needs to be us holding the knife to cut it.
Absolutely.
Everything else from there is trifles.
Hey, South Carolina, your mic's on.
He's gone.
No, he's over here on mute. 317, your mic is on.
Good morning. This is Ronan.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm doing well. It's the first time calling the show. And I've been listening in on everything, and he's definitely right. I've known him for over about 2 years. And we have, because we're very bipolar when it comes to acceptance of ourselves and what we're able to do. We actually have lack of acceptance of our history, and that's why it's important we protect our history. If we don't know where we came from, we're not going to go any further. When it comes to our businesses, we don't support our businesses, especially in times like these. We should be I personally believe it's the age of the entrepreneur. We have many gifts and abilities, and if we actually support each other, we wouldn't have to worry about our jobs going overseas. We can actually promote. You know, we can cut down on homelessness and a lot of stuff here, but for some reason we're arguing over the most trivial of nonsense, light-skinned, dark-skinned battles and all that foolishness. But I agree with quite a bit with Jason's been putting out there because, again, we have to hold ourselves accountable for everything. We have to speak with our dollars. We have to speak on with a lot of – we have to unify our voices and basically get our acts together instead of, like, looking for the quickest excuse to be career victims. And once we get that done, they can't say anything to us or towards us. They have to come to us when they need vital things. Everything they do, and the sad part is they put us as the face as everything negative. When they put out the Jason Collins, they put out the Frank Oceans out there, they'll put us on the front page. But then we have children with 100% graduation rate, or you have fathers taking care of their children, or they do any and everything to keep the family unit, which is the most powerful thing in the community and society, separated. They can control us. But when it comes to something that they do on the negative side, they're going to keep that quiet. That's why I look at certain things like where they do the whole Frank Ocean thing, putting him coming out versus Bruce Jenner transforming to whatever the hell he is now. So, again...
Yeah, what is he now?
He's a...
I'll tell you what he is. He's irrelevant.
He is. Yeah.
We as black people tend to... We as black people tend to focus on things that entertain us as opposed to things that empower us. Now, you asked a question here earlier, Tracy, about what it was that we could do, and the caller here segued into that because I got cut off before and I was trying to answer that. But what we need to do, understand something, and you all know this from government, people follow dollars. And where they see money starting to be aggregated, they just start to see how easily they can get a hold of it. Now, this works very bad with handout programs like TANF and Section 8.
Everyone faces.
But this works to your advantage in the capitalistic system. People will follow the money. And where they see money aggregating and where they see money moving, that's where the people will follow to. So if we want to get the attention of the masses, we need to start showing them that there's money to be made off of whatever we're doing or whatever we're talking about. When we do that, you don't have to ask where they are. You're going to be asking, can somebody close the door? There's too many people out there.
All right. And look
that's,
at the
that's
music.
A good feeling right there.
Look at how everything – well, say, look at everything as far as with music, too, where we have made, I mean, we made money being naturally talented as far as, like, our music, arts, and everything like that. But now you have these culture vultures come in here and basically plagiarize and basically wedge their way into where we've been doing, and we get little to no compensation for it. So,
okay, how did they do that?
The same way we gave the haircare industry, we gave it to them?
We gave everything away. We included them when they didn't.
This goes back to identity. Mm-hmm. Now, who are Robin Thicke's fans? Robin Thicke doesn't have any white female fans. They're all black females.
You're right.
I'm sorry. I'm not supposed to say that. I'm supposed to pretend that we don't know that. I'm sorry. Justin Timberlake does have white fans. Don't get me wrong. But that's not where he created his core base from when he went solo. We have given away these things. These guys just came in and just capitalized on what was sitting there. We gave those things away. Could you imagine me as a black man, going to Japan and calling myself a samurai? Could you imagine a situation where they accept me as that? Could you imagine a situation where they accept me as a sensei at their dojos? Could you imagine that? I don't care how good you are. I don't care if I'm out there Bruce Lee kicking the heads off of everybody over there. They are not going to give their most prestigious title to anyone other than a Japanese. You go to India, same thing. You go around the world, same thing. And in America, they use money to keep you out of it. So what does that tell you? That tells you that nobody sits up here and tries to figure out a way to gentrify and integrate their cultures except us. We don't value anything unless there's a white person doing it. We don't really value it. I'm sorry. We don't really value it as a group unless they're doing it. So once again, this comes back to what I said before about black. You need to value what it means to be black. Because we refuse to call rap music black music until some white folks start doing it from us. They don't want to say it's black music. You should have been saying that before he ever got here. Because if you had been saying that then, they never would have been able to do that because you would have firmly established that this is ours. And because we refused to do it, we left it sitting there like a baby on the corner, and now we're complaining because somebody else has come and adopted the child that we refused to give our name.
313, your mic is on.
Hello, peace. This is Niggas Vu from Facebook. How are y'all doing today?
Good, how are you?
I'm doing pretty good. I just want to expound on what Jason Black was saying in terms of you must have social economic gain. That is the importance, and not get caught up in the linguistics of politics. And the reason I say that is I just want to give a short, brief example of why. Something happened very significantly last year in June, I think it was June 25th, and the Voting Rights Act, Section 4, was struck down by the Supreme Court. Now, that's a huge historical, that was a hit.
Whoa, stop. That's not what happened.
Not at all.
They took out this eight or nine states that were in it, but they didn't strike down the whole thing. They said it was easy.
I didn't finish. I said the Voting Rights Act, Section 4. Section 4 was shut down. I wasn't completing my sentence. Section 4.
Okay, go ahead. They basically gutted it.
I'm sorry?
Nagus Boo was absolutely correct. He didn't say that they struck it all down. He's saying that they struck down the two key titles in it that held it together. By removing those two titles, you have destroyed the act. It's gone.
Totally agree.
The rest of it,
enforce the rest of it without saying that these are the statuses and the quotes and the metrics that we use to enforce it. If you don't use those metrics, the act has been essentially dismantled. That's why they don't have to strike the whole act down. You've
Jason,
taken away the two enforcement mechanisms.
So they struck down Section 4, which is very significant to the voters' rights because you have to go through a due process, a clearance through the judicial system, if they want to change the voting acts. So Jason Black is right about that. Now, the very next day, the same Sex Marriage Act was struck down, which is part of the Defense of a Marriage Act, which allowed gay people to have the same benefits as a regular marriage couple, such as federal health tax, Social Security, all the other benefits, et cetera. Now, the reason why black people lost, because that's how I look at it, black people lost yesterday, it was lost for them, and gay people, it was a gain for them because gay people have social economic gain. They have influence. And if we don't focus on those, if we don't focus primarily on social economics, politics is irrelevant because if you have no capital, then you have no say. And that's very simple. That's all I wanted to say.
I need to clarify something, though. Tracy, you sit on the board of elections. The reason why those sections were struck down and they were found unconstitutional now is because the way that the boards of elections are set up these days, they weren't set up like that in times past. You only had one party rule at one time or another. It's just like they're trying to say in Ohio that Secretary Blackwell discriminated against black people because he changed the polling places. Well, if you know how it's set up, one guy cannot change the polling place. Every board of election is set up with an even number of Republicans and Democrats. It cannot be done. It's a lie, and that's what they get you excited with, to go out and vote and support the Democrats to kill you every time, economically, psychologically, and physically, because 37% of your children are being aborted out of 1.2 million, and we get more abortions per capita than any other group. So now,
time for a reality check.
Well,
that's not true to a certain extent. I mean, because my friend Professor Black, who did the video about the myth of black male privilege and Adam Africa and the real Greeks, we've already been through this here. Antonin Scalia and John Roberts have been on the record officially as wanting to gut the Voting Rights Act since 1980. They've been on a 30-year jihad to gut this thing, and they finally had a chance to.
Thirty years ago,
they said they wanted to get rid of it. 30 years ago.
And once again, what's the purpose of it? Because all you did was make it harder for that state to conduct a fair election, because they had to ask permission to make. Wait a minute, Doc. They had to ask permission to make any changes. Now the thing is if you understand what has to happen so that people can go and vote, and who is allowed and to do what here and where and what's legal, you understand that puts a huge financial burden on the state. That's why they struck those portions down, not the whole act, and it was not the entire act, which is what they get you excited for once again to go and vote for Democrats.
Hold on,
wait a minute, hold on. And let me also throw this into this. As I sit on the Board of Elections here in my own county, the problem that we have is the striking down of those two provisions. There were nine states, I believe it was, that had to go to nine southern states that had to go to the federal government to get permission to change any type of a structure in their elections. And what they said was those nine states, it was no longer constitutional for them to actually point at nine states when you had the other 41 that did not have to do that. So Congress needs to make unilateral concessions so that every state is conducted the same elections the same way. That's what they're saying. That's what the law says.
Yes.
Now, let me also say this.
But that's not the reason they did that, though.
Now listen.
The reason that they did that because the federal government has primacy, and they just want to give the power to the federal government for primacy because at this point now, this has given them the wedge they always wanted where your local elections don't matter anymore.
Exactly.
Now you can't fight it.
Let me finish. But this is where I have to speak where I have a problem with us as an electorate. I can't get African Americans to get involved politically so that they can actually move towards becoming appointed to the boards of elections in their own counties and being an active participant within the Secretary of State's office so that they actually are seeing the governance of it and understanding who they're electing, why they're electing, and how it happens. And so because the boards of elections are a political entity, they don't get appointed to those boards because those are privy boards and they're elite boards for certain people, and we don't understand how it works, and so we don't go after them. And so let me say this. I really want us to understand we need to get more engaged in the process. So as we talk about socioeconomic status and moving forward economically, we need to be sitting on these boards of elections where the actual decisions are being made, so they're not being made against you, but they're being made for you. That's what I'm saying. I make the decision as a board member. I sit on the board. I actually make that decision as a board member.
But Tracy,
okay, let me give a little bit of information here. If you all take a look at the state of Michigan, Democrat Jennifer Granholm passed the emergency finance manager law in her state. What did that do? That state basically gutted democracy in Michigan.
Correct.
Yeah, you can have elections, but now they can declare your area of Michigan economically distressed or whatever and say that your city council can meet, but their votes are not binding, that the emergency finance manager gets the final say on everything, including budgets, laws, everything else. They can't do anything without approval from the emergency finance manager. So the Democrat passed it in the law, never used it, and now the Republican is there swinging it like a hammer. And the point that I'm trying to make to you is
And Jason, don't get me wrong, I agree with you there, but the same thing's going to happen when we have the nuclear option in the Senate.
My point about that is that don't you understand that the way that they're rigging the game right now is they're rigging it so that your local elections and even to this point your state elections will not matter. That's why things like gutting the Voting Rights Act and things like the emergency finance law, that's why that matters, because you need to understand that what they just told you in no uncertain terms, that walking into that voting booth is not really going to do you a lot of good right now. And there's some variation of that emergency finance manager law that's going to find its way into every legislature in this country.
Let me say
why?
This.
Because the people who are most benefiting from that law in Michigan right now are companies like Whirlpool, because the first place that they enacted the emergency finance manager law was in a little town, a little black town, a little poor black town called Benton Harbor. And who is the biggest resident and employer in that area in Benton Harbor? Whirlpool. And who wanted that law the most? Whirlpool, because they've taken huge tracts of land and basically given it over to them to use as they please. So what I'm saying is that striking down these laws, the purpose of that is, don't you understand, your Supreme Court that said we can gut this law, how did those guys get there? All the money that went into politics to get the president whose hand selected them without the voters' approval.
But, Jason, this is the problem. In Michigan, the Voting Rights Act would not have – and this is where the problem comes in. In Michigan, the Voting Rights Act that was gutted would not have affected Michigan, because Michigan never had federal government to make any changes.
First of all, they went to the federal courts to try to stop this, but that's not why I'm saying it. I'm citing those two together to show you that what you have now is a culture that circumvents the voter altogether. And in the case of Michigan, in the case of the Voting Rights Act, okay, what they did was the voters essentially voted for the Voting Rights Act through their representatives. You sent those people to Congress, you voted for them, and you could have removed them. Tell me what voters were fighting and clamoring to repeal or to strike down those parts of the Voting Rights Act. They were struck down by five individuals that the voters didn't vote for.
Tell me how many of them tell me how many people were clamoring, telling these people to vote for same-sex marriage too, either. So my point is taken. But the thing is tell me, you know what, though, brother? Let me tell you, if they try to stop me from voting, it's going to be details at 11.
I got
to
take a break. I'll be right back.
You guys can go ahead and talk.
Well, they're not going to stop you from voting. They're going to allow you to vote. But what good is a voting booth when the electric cord has been unplugged from it?
You and I can't be the only ones on this phone. Who else?
This is Bill. This is Alabama.
I'm here listening. I don't know if I've been muted, but I'm still listening. I'm still here.
Alabama, the thing is, man, like, you know, Al Gore just the other day was talking about population control in Africa. I think you're right, man. Both sides are out here. It's either or, man. In order to be empowered, in order to get some sort of fairness, you're going to have to be empowered economically. I agree. I mean, basically, everybody agrees with that. And I was trying to say this point. She cut me off. Marcus Garvey. Let me finish one point. Marcus Garvey had 5 and 6 different people come out of his movement, but he was one guy. And so what I was saying earlier, when I feel like you need a bigger platform, nobody can disagree with that logic, 90% of what you're saying. Yeah, I disagree. I'm a conservative. I disagree on certain points. But I don't care, because the greater good is that black people start controlling their wealth, which it is being given to other communities. And then we can start affecting change in a certain direction. And then we can sit down and talk about where we want to go. But we don't have a vehicle by which to even drive. We're on foot. We're not even walking. We're standing still. So I think, you know, we have to kind of look at it that way. Because Al Gore, hey, we made all this fuss about him getting in 2000. He wants to wipe black people off the face of the earth.
Well, here's the thing, okay? These people can't do anything unless we as black people allow them. They can come to us with any ridiculous idea that they want to, everything from chop up your children to why don't your men marry each other, okay? They can come to you with all manner of nonsense. We lack social cohesion. And because we lack that, we've allowed ourselves to allow people to come to us with the most ridiculous notions, ideas, propositions.
No.
And what we have to do is have a strong enough social structure that we don't even listen to them.
I'm going to have to beg to differ with you on that point about social cohesion, because I do believe that there's social cohesion, but it's in a form that is to our detriment. See, we embrace everything that kills us, and we're being sold to us by our leaders. And particularly, I was looking at something last night on ETV. Talking about the Citizens Council down in Mississippi. And they had individuals, black preachers, black community leaders that were actually, you know, selling them out.
Well, what makes them a black leader? Because I've never heard the term white leader. I'm still waiting to find who is the white leader, somebody who's been acknowledged as a, quote, white leader in America. So what exactly is a black leader?
Well, you asked the news media on that one, because
okay,
I call
so
them the so-called black leaders of America.
Labeling, okay, so the media is labeling somebody a black leader. So the real thing that we need to do is that when they do that, we as black people, because I do it all the time, we as black people need to call them out on that and say, wait a minute, why are you calling them a black leader? What qualifies them as a black leader? And then you need to ask the question, because if there's a black leader, will you please identify for me who the white leaders are? And why you've never called them that? I single-handedly got them to stop doing that in the press here in Shreveport. So
yeah, you know what?
On the one hand, you want to be what you're saying. Don't call it a black leader and separate us out. But on the other hand, you're talking about cultural cohesion. Now, either we're going to have it one way or the other way. So it gets confusing. It gets very confusing to my friends that are white and trying to understand this whole debate.
You have white friends. Interesting. But, you know, about this thing right here, cohesion.
Now, why would I not have white friends?
because that just seems like an oxymoron to me when a black person says it. But, I mean, hey, if you can get away with
that,
fine.
You lost me. You lost me on that. I am a United States Marine. I'm a United States Marine.
Congratulations.
And here's the thing. There, it doesn't make any difference to me what color or how much melanin somebody's got in their skin. A friend is a friend. A Marine is a Marine. And to say that it's odd, it's an oxymoron to have a white friend, that's a little bit disturbing to me.
Well, sorry to
say. Hey, we're back. And you listen to Tracy and Friends here on WSOM AM 600. The number is 347-945-5229. It is 41 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. And I want to thank Jason Black for coming on with us. And I have to say, you know, we may disagree on a lot of things, and this is, and it's okay to disagree. It's okay. And still work together and still be able to cohabitate and to get along and to move forward on things that we agree on. And that's something that we're going to have to learn. You may never agree with everything that a person says and or does, and it's okay. Would you agree, Jason?
Absolutely. Like I say,
but we have to move forward, and I plan on partnering with Jason and helping him with his documentary and getting the word out. I may not agree
Absolutely.
With everything that he says, but that doesn't mean that I'm going to hinder him, and we have to learn that. Because unless we lock arms and walk hand in hand and move forward, then everything that we talk about is just a mute issue. Go ahead, Jason.
What people need to do is black people, the measurement, the metric, the meter stick that I use against everything is I ask one question. Is this black empowerment? Now, if the answer to whatever I'm doing, whatever I'm working on is not black empowerment, if I can't give a solid, unquantified yes to it, then I'm doing the wrong thing. So if you ask yourself that question, if you use that as your litmus test for everything you're doing, I promise you, I guarantee it, you will land on your feet every single time. Every single time.
832, your mic is on. You've been waiting for a while. All right. 317, your mic is on.
Yes, ma'am.
Yes. How are you this morning?
I'm doing all right. About yourself?
We're good.
Yes, I definitely agree that we need to protect ourselves and our own. It's always... We've always been too enabling when it comes to everything. We want to include everybody in everything we do for acceptance. And granted, when I look at everything, we set the standard by making things acceptable. So if we have the ability to do that, we have to do that within ourselves. If we don't, we can't blame ourselves when we're no longer here or relevant. So I definitely agree we have to get back to rebuilding more than just one Black Wall Street. That's
right.
Be a lot more to build from that. We have to get back to education system, because basically getting tired of our young boys and girls being thrown into special education or basically being guinea pigs for drugs and all different means. We need to learn our history. We have to know where we came from, but to learn about ourselves and protect that. They have things as far as like with and I've seen with in my time in LA, I've seen different communities have their own banks, and they basically be able to sustain themselves. Only the black community doesn't have that. We don't have to buy into being shamed or being ashamed of being who we are. We are the first people, and we might as well stand up and embrace that. There's no shame in it. If we're going to do it, we might as well go all out. That's what we do on everything else.
Let me ask you, everyone, this. How do we begin to motivate people to collectively work together to get this done? Right here where we live, they're trying to put together a black credit union or a faith credit union. But getting people to buy into it, getting them to understand how important it is for them to have their own economic financial institution inside their own community, I don't think people have caught on to it. What do we do next?
Well, I believe if we're going to invest our time and ourselves into a product, we have to believe in ourselves. We have to lead by example. We have to present excellent customer service. We have to carry ourselves in a very dignified manner. If for some reason, when it comes to customer service, yeah, people feel they're entitled to have an attitude or they're doing a job that you're bothering them. Again, it's about community. If we don't take care of what we have, and this especially from the home, if we can't teach ourselves and our children conflict resolution and all the basic principles to function as a society, especially Black people, it's not going to translate to anything else we do, business, socially, everywhere. So once we have something done, we can't shortchange ourselves either, always looking for a hookup. We can't. We can't be always looking for a handout. We've got to learn how to sustain ourselves and each other. And once we do that, that's a start. As far as advertising, we need to make things honest. You can't have people doing taxes, cutting grass, and nails on one business card. That's disgusting. So, but I've seen it. I mean, in graphic art,
you
got people trying to do multiple things at the same time. Everything has a time and place. So we have to be not just more conscious of our time, we have to be more conscious into what we invest ourselves into. If we have anything, we have to do research and see how it benefits us. Again, we just can't chase after these superficial landmarks, trying to keep up with the Joneses. You'll pull both hamstrings financially and everything.
Yeah, that's true.
Well, I have a couple of thoughts on that as well. During the break, I was making the point that, you know, we don't have any friends. We don't have any enemies. We have permanent interests, but we don't have any friends. The Black community needs to get reconnected to itself. It's oxymoronic to say that we've got friends outside the community. We haven't made allies with ourselves.
Yeah.
We haven't joined together with ourselves at this point. So to say that we have somehow made a connection outside of our community, that's the first thing we need to do. Is the answer to your question, Tracy, is we need to start reconnecting with ourselves. We have any place that Black people congregate is where the message needs to be. First, your idea first goes to churches and whatnot, but here's my real thing about it. Anywhere where Black people congregate. The second thing is that you as the communicator, unfortunately, but it's just the reality, Black people respect status. And you as the communicator are going to have to imply some sort of status to them, unfortunately. But that's just the way it is. Black people do not respect you without status. Dr. Umar Johnson has spoken about this, and he brilliantly broke it down. We respect titles. We respect positions, things like that. That's what gets status in the Black community. So you're going to have that if you're going to effectively communicate to Black people. You cannot just come to them with your hand and say that do this because it's the right thing to do. It doesn't work that way, unfortunately. It would be great if people did things based on a moral basis of this is the right thing to do. People do what they think is most convenient for them. Now, did you notice the difference there? I didn't say what's in their best interest. I said what's most convenient. So what we are going to have to do if we're going to spread this message is make that convenient. Why? Because they've actually got something else vying for their time, their attention, and their allegiance. They've got a whole other side of society that is telling them, sit down. You don't have to worry. No, don't worry. We'll own the phone company for you. We'll own the grocery store for you that gives you the food you eat. We'll own the record company. Don't you worry. We'll take care of that. The hair salon, you can close yours down. We got you, man. We got you. So we have a whole other side of society that is competing and telling them it's more convenient. There's nothing more convenient than telling somebody, sit down, do nothing. There's nothing more convenient than that. So we are competing with them for what's most convenient. So we're going to have to start following the rules as the people who are the communicators. Even in the Matrix, Morpheus had to have a ship before he could free Neo. He didn't just tell him, welcome to Matrix to Neo and say, I brought the gospel of freedom to you. He had to actually have a ship and get the young man out of there. So we as Black people too often, you know, if you go take a look at across the 20th century, all the private companies that got involved in politics and social change, Andrew Mellon, Carnegie, Rockefeller, the Welch's Company, the Grape Juice and the Jelly Company, yes, the Welch's Company, General Electric. We can go down the line because there is not one Fortune 500 company today that is not involved in A, politics, B, some sort of social program today. Not one, including Walmart. There's not a one that's not doing both of those things. How is it that we as black people figure we're going to make social change, but we're going to avoid that ourselves? You can't come to the table with nothing. Having a forum like this is a fantastic first start where we all start we're using media and communicating with our people and with each other. This, what we're doing right now, is the first step. The next step is going where our people are and making sure we have something to offer them. Offer them time on your show. Everybody who's listening right now, you need to be doing something similar. What the young man was saying before about, you know, he wants to get an online video and things. We need to be putting together. Tracy can't be doing it by herself. I've got my radio broadcast, but we can't be doing it by ourselves. If we all give people something that they can be heard on, that's the first step, and then we can go from there to offer something. Because if once we've got them together, if we're not talking to each other, nothing else is going to get done. It's just not as a group. It's just not going to get done. We have an individual here and an individual there and an individual way out there in Ohio doing what they're supposed to be doing and not bringing it together. That's the next step. Do this now, and now that we're ready to start bringing it together. The third thing is we need to start enforcing it. If you got a pastor in a church who's not helping you to do this, you need to call him out on the carpet about it. And you need to be ready to get kicked out the church. You need to be ready to get kicked out the church when you do it.
Yeah.
But black, in the Muslim religion, there was a Muslim who once told me that the reason that Muslims, they like Christians, but they don't respect them. And he said the reason that we don't respect Christians is because Christians cannot tell you why they believe what they believe. And by that, he meant that Christians don't have a core set of principles that they understand. We don't have a rock or a hill that we're willing to die on. And when you walk into a church, Martin Luther nailed the message to the church door. Why? To let the pastor know, essentially, we're not happy with you. But black people don't do that. We don't call the pastor out on the carpet. We talk about Catholics and how they treat the Pope. Black people don't treat their ministers any different. We don't treat them any differently. So we need to call them out on the carpet by name. Calling out Al Sharpton is a good start, but he's not in Youngsville.
Yeah. Youngstown. Youngstown.
Right,
Youngstown.
Youngstown. All those young. In any case, we can yank on. I mean, it's good to flog Eddie Long. It's good to flog him in Atlanta. That's nice. That's fun. It's easy to talk about, you know, free flow dollars up there in New York. It's easy to talk about them. But if you're not talking about the pastor where you are in your town, yeah, you all know TD. TD, Top Dollar.
Yeah, TD Chase.
But it's very easy for us to call out somebody nationally, okay? And I'm just having fun with them, nothing personal. Yeah. But it's very easy to call out people nationally. But that's not where change happens. Change happens on the street in the neighborhood where you are. And if you're not going to call out Pastor James down at 100 Main Street, we'd be a fool to think you're going to take us anywhere. You won't stand up to him, and he can't do anything to you. Why should I believe that you're going to stand up to the white socioeconomic power structure that's tripping you up at a higher level when you won't even do anything about this? So if you start there, that will make change. Because everybody else is thinking this. They're just waiting for the one person who's got the guts to stand up and say it. Be that one person.
942, your mic is on. 330-942.
Hi.
Hi.
How are you?
Good. How are you this morning?
I'm doing well. I just have a question. Listening to the show, and the question that I have is that why is it necessary to be black? Why is it necessary to hammer in the point? Okay, let's ask the question. Okay, you're going. Why is the African American? Why aren't they just Americans?
Wow. Was that a serious
question?
That's
amazing.
Yes.
I didn't hear the question. What was the question?
The question was, why do you have to be black? Why can't you just be American? Why can't you just be who you are?
This is an amazing
why not?
Country.
She'll be here all week.
Hold on. Give her a minute. What'd you say?
I said this is an amazing country. Why is that? The thing is, it's like everybody has to walk around with a label. Why the label?
Label?
Tracy, can I interject something before the answer? Go ahead, Matt. I just want to interject something before the answer. And this comes from a lot of the white community when it comes to listening to what we're talking about on the radio today. Like when I started listening to the show, I came into the show not a racist, but saying, why can't we put the past in the past and continue forward? I didn't understand all the problems that the black community faced. I didn't understand it. I still don't understand a lot of it, but I'm now learning because, ma'am, there is definitely a backstory that you need to be aware of in order to understand where blacks are coming from in America. It's not about being racist. It's about gelling together with themselves to be proud of who they are as a community again. There is a lot to it before you can come out and say, why do you have to be black? You really got to start understanding that.
Yeah, and the past is still present. You got a lot of things that happened in the past. They have a slick way of doing it in the present. We're still getting dragged behind trucks. We're still getting lynched, not maybe physically, but economically and socially. Again, they're still doing different – they're still doing a lot of similar tactics, but they switched it up and hurting us in a lot more ways, or more subtle ways than anything. Some of them, but nowadays they're getting more blatant. They're getting out more disrespectful. So, again, like when I seen in L.A., when you said, like, why does anything have to be black? I've seen everything's in certain things, like Jewish synagogues. They put that on the front on everything. So we can't be have selective outrage on certain things. There's something things that have to have definite markers out here. You have to, you know,
okay,
if you have an identity, you put it out there.
I've got two questions here. First of all, for the caller, because I don't know in what context this is being asked, is the caller black or do they identify themselves as black, racially, I mean?
942, go ahead and answer the question.
I am black. But I'm a person.
Okay. First of all, there's an old saying.
Hold on. 942, go ahead and continue your statement because I don't think he heard the rest of it.
No, I said I am black, but the thing is I consider myself as a person first. I don't walk around saying, oh, I'm black. I am a person, and I'm entitled to everything anybody is entitled to. So the thing is I am having a hard time understanding that.
I'm understanding human history is the problem that she's having here because you're not entitled to anything. Human rights is an artificial construct.
When I say entitled, I don't mean it in the true sense of entitled. The thing is, I'm allowed to, like one of the callers would say, you can be friends with whoever you want. It doesn't matter what the color of his skin is. It doesn't matter. You know, you can drive a black car, you can drive a white car. It is your choice. And it's one of the things that it affords people to choose what they want to do.
Okay, well, I've got your point, okay? I mean, you've made it – we've heard this 1,000 times before. First of all, it's not your choice. You don't have a choice which car you drive. You're in the black car. Whether you want to tell yourself it's red, white, green, purple, it's black. So – sorry if you're a little uncomfortable about that. Second of all, you're trying to go against the last 160,000 years of human evolution. You're not entitled to anything. We live in a world where people take what they want. We have tried to create a civilized society where people don't just go around and grab folks' daughters and run off with her. But the bottom line is we still live in a world where that kind of thing can occur, and it can occur to you based upon your skin color. It can occur to you based upon your geographic location. It can occur to you based upon the subset of friends that you hang out with or your level of education. So whether we want to tell ourselves that this is the way we wish things were, the bottom line is this is the way the world is. So whether or not you're black, you were born black, that's the way it is. Now, if you want to say, I myself don't personally pride myself on the label, you know what? you go right ahead and you do that. Just understand, you live in a world that gave you that label. You didn't have a choice in that. So if you want to walk around
blind,
that's your choice. But just understand, blinders only work for horses, and that's because there's a white guy on their back whipping them.
Do we understand that
a bunch of people?
Black, suppose that we're not only black people that were slaves in this world?
Oh, my goodness.
Really? Black people.
When somebody says something like that, when we're talking about black people, and then somebody tries to interject other races of people, it's like when you're talking to women about things, and then they want to say, well, white women do it too. Well, I'm not trying to marry a white woman. I'm trying to marry a black woman, so I don't care what's happening with everybody else. I'm talking about black issues with black people, so can we please stay on the subject of black people?
And that's their problems
and deal with their issues. Jewish people went through the Holocaust in Germany, and they dealt with their issue. Japanese people had internment camps in America, and they dealt with it. And they moved on.
No, they haven't.
Yeah, no, they haven't. They're still coming up against the problems that they did back then.
Right.
Please,
but
you take a look at where
done.
You are. That's fantasy.
Now, Jason,
deal with ours.
Jason, let me ask you, and I understand what you're saying. You know, the black community needs to gel, and it needs to come. It needs to get to some type of a truth where everybody understands what's going on and cohes. I get that. My question to you is, do you not agree, though, that the white community needs educated a lot more on these subjects and should be included in the conversation so that everybody eventually, hopefully, gets to the same platform?
In Chinese schools, they teach their children about Booker T. Washington. How many American schools teach their children in depth about Booker T. Washington? How many American schools teach their children in depth about Mao Tse-Tung, but they teach their children about Booker T. Washington? How many black schools in America, charter schools, private schools, religious black schools, teach their children about Mao Tse-Tung? So I don't have a problem. I mean, of course you're going to teach your children. You're 13% of the population. Of course you need to teach your children on how to deal with the other 77% of the population. Of course.
Here's the problem that I run into with what you're saying. You know, I knew about Booker T. Washington and Mao Tse-Tung and Pol Pot and some of the other Watchman Nee and some of the other leaders in the whole world. You know why I understood that? You know why I knew it? Because I took the time and my parents took the time to make sure that I was informed about this outside of the school. I read, okay? It's not a matter of somebody teaching you something. It's a matter of how much you want to get for yourself. Mao Tse-Tung is not in the U.S. history books, but I got it outside of that. So we can't blame white folks for that.
You just said for yourself that, my parents told me. So you didn't get it for yourself. Your parents got it for you. And there's an important thing there.
Here we go with the Obama lingo talking about you didn't get that on your own. Be realistic.
No, sir, I'm still on your own. I'm saying that you're acting as if you just got up one day and out of curiosity looked up Booker T. Washington. It's nice if you have parents tell you.
Actually, what I did was I grabbed a hold of Encyclopedia Britannica and read the damn thing.
Okay, you just said here that my parents. So now you're contradicting yourself. You know what?
I'm not contradicting myself on any level. What I'm telling you is I went and investigated. My parents told me about Booker T. Washington. I knew about black history before the implementation of Black History Month.
Okay, well, now that we agree that you didn't get that on your own, here's the real thing. In the school.
Oh, man. I'm not going to have that argument with you. I'm not going to have that discussion with you. Because forget the collective, man. I don't even want to hear that.
Wow.
The only person that can effectively change anyone, the only person that can effectively change yourself is you. Nobody else can't change you. You have to do it on your own.
Well, actually,
with
all due respect, I have to disagree. Because, again, when it comes to teaching, the parents are the first teachers. And just as you said numerous times, your parents set you off on the right path to discover yourself. That's what needs to happen as far as, especially in the black community, or any community, especially the black community. So you didn't come out the womb thinking, yes, I know about Marcus Garvey. I know about all these different people. No, you had to, again, your parents taught you to look at where you came from to know where you are possibly going. So it's not really an argument. I mean, you stated it. You just got lost in the conversation a bit.
We as a people, when I say we have a holistic culture that from every step along the way, from money to media to finance to education to religious, every step along the line needs to be Afro-centered. And by that, what that means is that you see the world, you see other races of people, you see other countries, but you see it from a black perspective. Not just
I have nothing from Africa. The only thing that I have in common with Africa is the color of my dad's skin. Nothing else.
Then I don't see how you can conversation with black people at all.
If black people in America.
Have you ever taken the earth with something like
that? Be honest with themselves.
Have you ever heard an Irish person say, I ain't got nothing in common with Ireland? Have you ever heard a Japanese person say, my parents are from Korea, but I ain't got nothing with Korea. Only thing I got from them is
yes,
my parents.
I have. Well, and the thing is, yes, I have. I have. So one of the thing is, and what the caller just said, there's right. You're an American. Africa is sitting in the background. You are an American. That's
okay.
Ladies and gentlemen,
Americans first.
We articulated for you why we haven't made any progress over the last 90 years. Those two people just articulated it for you. Because they don't see themselves as black. They see themselves as Americans. And who is the dominant culture of America who's so overwhelmingly dominant that they don't even have to say what their race is?
The American culture.
Hey,
the American culture.
You're listening to Tracy and Friends here on WSOM AM 600. The number is 347-945-5229. Jeff, I think you want to chime into the conversation.
Yeah, Jason, when this young lady, I would venture to say, comes from a nation that is run by black people, and when they come over here, they don't have the same inhibitions that the people that live here do, because we were taught inhibition, even in our raising by our own people, because it would prolong our lives at one time. So we are afraid to make moves that people that come from outside a country, and especially a country that's run by black people, that have a black president already or black leaders, et cetera, and predominantly black population.
Yeah,
so
that's not true.
Let me finish my statement, please, and I'll be quiet.
Okay.
What's going on is this: in this country, you have something called institutional racism, and it is instituted and set up to work against more than just a few of you getting through a crack. And you have to learn how to get around it, because you don't control anything politically, you don't control anything economically. And because you don't, and you've now become the third minority in the country, and you've now become the poorest minority in the country, even though your money spent together would make you the seventh, the tenth largest nation in the world, if you could work this thing around, you have to deal with this. No, you're black because they see you as black. And you better believe it, and think about where you put your business.
But now,
and that makes a difference. Where you put your business makes a huge difference.
Let me ask you this. Are we focusing too much, and I think this is the question, do we focus too much on being black and not being just a good business person?
Right.
I
100% agree.
If we focus more on ethnicity of black people, that engenders in you a standard of excellence,
because when I see Tracy walk through my door, I understand that I value her as a black person. I'm going to give her the best service and the best experience that I possibly can because I am dealing with one of my people. Forget the president. She's got more status and experience because I value being black so much that I am going to go the extra step, the extra mile every single time.
But my question is, and this is where I come. Hold on, South Carolina. My question is, my problem with black people is when I look in the mirror, I don't see the best quality of person. And this is where I think you and I agree, and then I'm going to go over to where I think I disagree. I agree because, see, I love being black. And so when I look at the color of my skin and the texture of my hair and the size of my lips and the shape of my nose and the color of my eyes, and I am proud because I am proud of who I am. And that pride has been stripped from African Americans in America. Black people in America when they look in the mirror, they don't love the curves, the shape. They don't love the hue of their skin. They don't love the size of their tongue. And so because they don't embrace it, when black men see black women, I don't think they understand the black pride that they should have when they see someone that looks like their parent and their mother. And I should love a black man. There's something wrong with that. But when it comes down to actually just human life, I love everyone who I see because I see who is inside of them and not the color of their skin, but the content of their character. Mm-hmm. And we have not learned to love ourselves so that we can love someone else.
Exactly. Well, I had a question to ask.
Hold on, wait a minute. I got to bring South Carolina and then Jason back in, and then caller, I'll bring you in because I jumped in on this. Go ahead, South Carolina.
Well, Tracy, the thing that makes me more nervous about what he's saying is this. You know, the same type of comments and rhetoric was made by other people throughout history, and these people basically tried to annihilate anybody that was not like them. i.e. Adolf Hitler and other folks throughout history. And that's what bothers me when I hear these. That's what sends off, you know, alarms and bells in my head when I hear people talking about separate out it just doesn't sit very well with me.
Jason?
Okay. Can you find anything in this world that becomes more powerful when you start mixing it? Okay, your silence answers everything. Next question.
I thought you were, Wait a minute. You're asking me a question.
Yeah.
Sir, you're not. You heard me when I asked.
No. Hold on. TNT does not exist by itself in nature. It has to be made. It has to be derived from something else. Okay? That's trinitrotoluene, TNT, dynamite. Now, I answered your question.
Something that becomes stronger as you make mixture to it?
Well,
you misunderstood
the question.
You misunderstood the question, and we're not going to manufacture.
So, listen, man. Let me explain something to you. A human being is a human being, no matter what color their skin is. If you're saying that I'm more powerful because I'm black, that's crazy. That's an area
No, it ain't South Carolina. No, it ain't. You really don't know.
No. Hold on. When Hitler said it, it's Nazism. It's racism.
First of all,
now, when you're saying it, it's okay.
With Nadia, and they bring up Hitler, they've already lost. When you have a conversation with someone who brings up Hitler, they compare the person that they're talking to and bring up Hitler, that person is already lost. Nobody would like Adolf Hitler. Nobody on this earth will like him. So somebody goes flying off the rails that badly, they delegitimize themselves. Secondly, I never said that it makes you better than another person. You said that, so obviously you're thinking it. But I never said that. Now, what I said is that we as black people should, what I'm saying is that we as black people need to do what everybody else has already done 100, 200, 300 years ago and perfect ourselves as a people first. After we do that, then we can go talk about doing all this other fanciful science fiction that you're referring to. But if we don't do that, all the rest of it accounts to nothing, and all we can really do is continue the situation that we have today of empowering other people. You will never hear an Irish person say what you just said. You will never hear a Korean say what you said. You will never
explain to me. Korean is not a race. It's a nationality. It is a nationality. Irish is a nationality. Okay? Now, here's the other part of it. Okay? At what point has Africa, the continent of Africa, been so powerful, and here in recent history, has been so powerful that they have destroyed or just dwarfed everybody else?
Yes, when have black people been so powerful that they could become a Hitler? Oh, yeah, we don't have that ability.
Here's what I'm asking. An economic, when has Africa become an economic power? You got African people over there. You got blacks over there.
I'm trying to answer you.
To come to America?
Okay,
stop letting me
talk. Black people who are most in denial of their identity, black people, and specifically Africans. So that answers your question for you, doesn't it?
It does not answer my question.
I am who I am.
The color of my skin has no bearing on who I am.
Wow.
I will not accept it regardless.
Okay. The people around who have the strongest economies and the strongest societies are the people with the strongest source for economic and ethnic identity. Period. End of discussion. Empirical fact. Next question.
404, your mic is on.
Wow.
One thing I'd like to say is that I think that having something of a useful definition of what community is can be something of a help. One thing I've heard people say community, but it seems to me that the concept of that is somewhat muddled. A community is something which has essentially two levels. A community is first formed for mutual interest of self-protection, and then we expand from there to actual economic empowerment. And until black people even get to the point where they feel that their community is a place where they protect themselves and are willing to protect themselves against people outside of the community, there is no community and there will be none.
Well, what if you're a person who says, I'm not a black person, I'm an American? Well, they see themselves as part of all those communities that are on the outside doing them harm.
Hold up, because I don't want to go too far, because we go too far off the rail. As I said,
yeah.
I love Tracy for who she is as a black woman, and because I love my culture and who I am, which gives me pride in myself, which makes me not lay down with Tom, Dick, or Harry. Which makes me stand up with and present myself well and to put my best foot forward as I go out the door. When I go out the door, I treat everyone with respect and dignity because I respect myself. What's wrong with, and this is my opinion, but what's wrong with the black community is when I look in the mirror, I don't see the pride of who I am when I see it, and that is not instilled in us. So we need to cover that first.
Well, I'd like to address that a bit.
Sure.
I think that one of the issues that we often have is that we try to put the cart before the horse. Love is something that comes after other things. Love is not the first thing that you get for people who are not your parents. And even your parents, you get love because of what they do. You don't love people simply because of who they are, these nebulous concepts. Love is based upon prior experiences and actions. And the reason why black people often do not have any self-love is that they do not see black people actually doing things worthy of love.
That's totally incorrect. I hate to tell you that, because that's not love. Love is a choice, and love is mostly unconditional. And if you want to see love,
no, that's not.
Okay,
I completely disagree.
Let me say what I hear you, but let me say what I'm going to say. What you see as love is that black people are now suffering the worst that they've ever suffered in years, yet they still support this president, just like he's the one. He's going to still do something to deliver them from it, and he's done everything he can to make sure his policies destroy your community. And
black people love their slave owners sometimes.
So it's
precisely the
black
point.
People sometimes love.
That's my point. My premise was, until we act, because when you talk about, you know, being a black person is loving myself and being respectful. We don't love our parents because, and when I say that, we don't take pride because we don't respect our parents anymore. But our parents don't demand respect anymore.
Yeah.
Our grandparents, our grandparents used to teach us, and there was nothing that we would not do for Nana, Grandma, and Grandpa. Because those are my parents, and that's my lineage and my heritage. And I had a respect for them, and they taught me everything that I know. And we have stripped that away from us. So when you when you look at black people, if you don't look at in the mirror and appreciate and respect who you see, you have a hard time respecting anyone else that is around you, whether they be black and or white. So when we talk about...
I agree that you do have that.
We who?
I agree that we do have a hard time respecting people in that way. I agree with you on that. But I think that the reason why we used to respect Nana and all of those other people was that those people were our protectors. They protected us against an often unsafe world. They were the people who were the shield between us and being lynched in some of the cases in the olden days. They did things. Nowadays, most people do not respect their grandparents and their parents because they do not see their parents and grandparents doing respectable things.
But what I'm saying is the pride of the, you know, during this, there was a black pride. And so when we talk about community, it's kind of hard for us to have a common unity if I don't have self-pride in my own self when I look in the mirror and look at myself. If I wear my pants around my ankles and I go out and have children that I cannot take care of that look like me.
And knowledge
and
yourself.
Right, there you go. And so until we actually have an understanding of who we are, whose we are, and having a self-regulation and a self-pride, we will never be able to take pride in anything outside of ourselves. And that is the problem that black America has right now.
And you hit the nail on the head what I was going to say. Because every time we look in the mirror, you got people who look at complete strangers. They say, well, I'm this, I'm that. Well, I'm half this or half that. They don't accept what they are. Fully. There always has to be an excuse or an asterisk for what they're looking at. Once you look at yourself and learn to love yourself, that's one of the cornerstones or keystones of building a community because they have a knowledge of self and each other and what is worth protecting.
And that will cause me to respect you, and it will cause me to respect my family, it will cause me to respect my man and my husband, my children, and cause me to do better. So when I go outside of my community and go outside of the black community that I'm living in or my black family or whatever it is, when I see a white person, I still have self-pride, so nothing that you bring in is going to harm who I am. And that's something that we need to put back into our community.
And not just that, but the more strongly that a people identify themselves and their ethnic heritage, the more respect that they get from those outside of their ethnicity. You don't engender respect by imitating people who are not like you. You generate respect from people who are not like you by perfecting everything you are. You take a look at Japanese culture and their samurai swords, and everybody's running around in the movies now with samurai swords. Did the Japanese step away from that? No, they inculcated it to the fact that you've universally recognized it. We as black people are the only people on earth, going back to these culture vultures, no wonder they can just walk right in and walk off with it. Half your folk are out here telling you that we're not black, we're Americans. What does it matter if Robin Thicke and Justin Timberlake are singing our music?
And let me say this, and let me also put this into the conversation just for a few minutes. We have to understand that social engineering, based on media perception, has caused us to be flawed.
One of many things.
And when I say that, one of many things, but I'm saying that because I'm watching it. We're being indoctrinated by a lot of things, and I am an American, but I am a black American, and I take pride in being both and being strong at being both. It's important to me, and I take heritage. Go ahead.
Oh, go ahead. I want to ask a question after you finish that, though.
Because what is happening is I no longer have any self-worth. And so now I take on other personalities and I become bipolar because now I become something that I'm not because I no longer respect who I am.
Okay.
And so now
I can understand that.
And so as a black woman, because I don't respect who I am, you know, I'll do anything for somebody else's love because my father did not do what he needed to do to instill in me my self-worth. And my mama did not nurture me and tell me who I was. And so when I say this, we need to adhere to that because as an American, you can't be an American unless you can be who you are first.
Well, see,
as a proper black American, we try to be anything but who we are first.
We keep running from ourselves.
That's who I see in the mirror. Pardon me?
What?
We keep running from ourselves. We're
absolutely
actually terrified
absolutely.
Of exactly who we are, who we were, and who we're meant to be. And we're trying to be any and everything but us.
And so,
again, that is
really
not even close to schizophrenia.
And so, when I say that, those that are listening, because I have white friends saying, Tracy, why does the black community, why do they abort their own community as fast as they do? He said, I've never seen anything like. He said, Tracy, I don't understand. And he's right, but it's because I have no self pride when I look in the mirror at myself. I don't like what I see, so I want to disassociate myself from it.
That is a product of black culture, which is in fact created by white supremacists. But I mean black culture, and I'm talking traditional black culture. I'm not talking modern black culture. I'm talking the black culture that was practiced by our great grandparents was white supremacist culture. It was something that was forced upon them by white supremacists, and that is one of the major reasons why that's the reason why black people were clamoring so hard for desegregating all of these white establishments because they felt like it would get them closer to being white. That was part of black culture, that desire.
And it destroyed
how can
destroyed
you say
our...
that you live in a cult? If you live in a culture, if you live in a system, and in order for you to be able to live, survive, and thrive in that system, you must daily get up and every day work to circumvent and avoid that system, then how can you sit up and say that you are a member of that system?
Here, and I'll tell you, Jason, and I'll say this to you. On the whole total thing is every time that we became independently, economically independent, we've been beat down by one group or another. Let's put it that way. And as we do that, as we get this, you know, beat down that we've had, then we absolutely have shrunk back to where we think we can't do it. Somebody close your car window, please. And we mute your phone for right now. We're beat down. And the last huge thing was the Black Wall Street. We can recognize that because these people were taking control. They didn't need anybody. They even made their own guns and ammunition out there in Black Wall Street. But what happened was the government destroyed it. And I hate to say it, it was up under the watch of the progressives. The progressive president gave the permission to destroy Black Wall Street, and that was Woodrow Wilson. And even though they didn't finish destroying it till a couple months after he was out of office, it still was him that allowed them to use the planes and the things that they did to go destroy them. And just
right.
they had their own private planes. They had all types of things in that place. But the thing is you have people that are afraid to do that right now, and they're afraid to come together. It's a thing that we need to overcome again. I love being black. I love trying to do things to help my people and my community per se excel. But they think because I say conservative or don't say conservative, and I don't vote, and I don't believe that gay rights is the new civil rights, along with the NAACP and this foolishness like this, they believe that there's something wrong with me. So that's the thing that gets me, and we have to stop that foolishness.
Yeah.
Well, I think that
well, you know,
have to stop the foolishness depending on the government at all.
Hold on. I'm going to hear what Jason. What do you have to say about this?
Once we have our socioeconomic act together, we won't care about that. Do you notice that you don't hear the Orientals out there complaining about gay marriage? You don't even hear the Arabs and Muslims complaining about it. Why? Because they have a culture that is centered on their people and themselves, what's happening in their societies and their groups around the country. They are not listening to what white society is doing. If white society has a 50% gay marriage rate, you're not going to see that amongst Muslims. You're not going to see that amongst Arabs. You're not going to see that amongst Asians. If we as black people concentrate on ourselves, they can make all these wacky social allowances that they want to. We will be too busy building and too busy dominating to be concerned about that nonsense.
I agree.
Yeah, I agree with that too.
Now let's get on the ball with it so we're not worried about all this detritus.
Well, the thing is I agree with you 1,000%, but what are you going to do with those whose mindset is telling you that you can't be this or can't be that and be for me, which is absolutely absolutely.
That's part of self-esteem. That's part of self-esteem. Again, like once you stand strongly behind what you believe and you see and people see that it's working, they have to make a choice: either get on the ball or get ran over. That's basically with anything, especially something positive.
Yeah, but yeah. I mean, it depends on if you're talking about people inside the black community or outside. I'm not sure who he was referring to.
Inside. You're talking about inside. Inside, because you here I'm telling a guy on my Facebook page that, you know, we have to have economic independence from the system, whether you're black, white, Republican, Democrat, blah, blah, blah. Black people have to have independence. He's telling me all this other. You're against the middle class, and you're but he's not going to read enough to see that the middle class has shrunk, especially the black one. Blacks are losing in every single economic marker there is. Period. And it ain't because of the freaking Voting Rights Act. You know what I'm saying? I'm using that.
Middle class has not shrunken. The middle class has not shrunken. The middle class has evaporated.
Well, this is what I'm saying. This is what I'm saying. You still have a couple people in the middle class. That's still
but
remnants.
But it is not growing.
No.
And if you look, and we're losing on every hand, and we can't. How do you build when you don't have the resources to build? And let me say this, for the last half hour, the last 20 minutes that I have on my show, Jason, having you on has been a blessing, and I thank you for coming on. You're more than welcome to come back and hang out with us again. We're on Monday through Friday from 9 until noon here, wherever you're listening in, from Blog Talk to iHeart to 600 WSOM, and we love having you in, and we love the discourse, and we do this every day. But my question is,
where do we start now?
But I mean, seriously, we just had a school board race and nobody was interested and nobody came out to either run, and they didn't come out to vote. But yet we're in the bottom tier of the state when it comes to education in our community.
Starts within.
How do we get people? How do we rock these people and wake them up? Because, you know, they talk about voter suppression unless they don't want you to come out to vote. When they don't want you to come out to vote, everything is good. But all politics is local. How do you get people to start going out and getting their own lawn mowing system and their own pie baking bakery and their own cleaning store and getting economic development and understanding that they can go work for themselves and they don't have to go out and ask somebody else for a job?
Once again, it starts from a grassroots level of what we're doing right now. This conversation was not happening 10 years ago. We're 160 years late to the party, I guess better late than never, but it starts with this, with black people actually talking to each other and saying, you know what, the most important thing is not passing a civil rights bill. We did that. The most important thing is not passing a voting rights bill. We did that. The most important thing is not affirmative action. We did that. The most important thing is, well, what's the one thing we haven't discussed? Well, we haven't discussed that group economics because we don't want to identify ourselves as black and we don't want to identify ourselves as, you know, excellent. And we don't want to do any of that because it might hurt our chances of getting some non-black friends we've been looking at. So let's see if we can discuss something else. No, let's start there. The one one thing we haven't tried yet. So that's what you're doing, what you're doing with your broadcast, what I'm doing, what I'm doing. If all of us do what we're supposed to be doing, it comes together. But it's we are at the beginning. We are at the very beginning of hitting off the starting block, okay? You're going to be looking at – it's going to be about another good 20-year effort here. But it starts here, right now, with what we're doing with you and me and everybody on this line and everybody listening and everybody on Facebook and Twitter and Instagram and Pinterest and everything else. It starts here with all of us understanding, because I can drop $1 million on every single black person in America tomorrow if you'd like. We can drop $1 million on each and individual one. And guess what? It'll all be gone within 24 months. With the exception of a small percentage of those people, the rest of it will be gone and back in the hands of whites, Asians, Arabs, and everybody else, because we're not ready for it yet. So that's what a re-education effort is about, because we're not ready. Even if we had to drop on us tomorrow, we don't know what to do with it. We need people like you and me to teach them what they need to do.
Your documentary that's going to come out at the end of the year, what's it going to be about?
It's going to be about black socioeconomics. I'm talking to the most influential minds in America about the situation. I've talked to Dr. Claude Anderson at length. We spoke to him for a good 4 hours. We spoke to Brett Pulley. He is the author of the book, The $1 Billion Bet, which is about the BET's rise. We talked to Alayla Bundles. She is the great-great-granddaughter of Madam C.J. Walker and a historian of the family. We talked to Umar Johnson. The list is long here, but it's about going – it is the first documentary in history that goes in-depth and is solely completely focused upon the issue of black socioeconomics and grappling with the question of why we are the poorest people in America. You can follow us at our website, theblackchannel.net, and definitely it's going to be something to see, because this documentary is the most important documentary of all time. And it's the most important of all time because this documentary, unlike anything before it, is going to decide if the first race of people on this planet have a future.
Jason, you said you have a radio show on. Where is it?
Well, it's on our website, theblackchannel.net. We'll be broadcasting here by next week. So okay. I've taken a hiatus while we were editing the documentary and whatnot because we finished principal photography. We're still going to be doing that for a few more months. But in the meantime, we'll be back broadcasting here. We'll be looking at next week to get that back up and going. And we hope everybody will join us for that when we get into these types of discussions in depth.
What time are you on?
It usually will be 7 p.m. Central Time. We're going to up our schedule, though, so we're probably looking at broadcasting. Before, we were just doing it on the weekends, but now we're looking at broadcasting somewhere in the area of 3 to 4 days a week. So we're still working out what our schedule times will be, but all of that will be announced. If you're not on my Facebook, it's under the name Jason Black or Black Authority. If you're not on my Twitter, it's the Black Channel on Twitter. Just look for the picture of Eldridge Cleaver, and you've found the right place.
Jason, I appreciate you. It's been really great having you on. We may not agree on everything, and you don't have to agree with everything that everyone goes through and everyone says, but you have to think and you have to become proactive. I'm quite sure for my white listeners out there, it has been a great education for you today. Welcome to the black world. But we have to make some changes, and it has to begin with us. It is Black History Month, and Black History Month begins with the history of every day. And we need to start making our own history so that we can have a better future for our community, because if we don't start doing that, we're going to lose. I'm going to take a break. I'll leave the phone lines open. If you're listening.
Hello.
You're still on. I think she says she's taking a break.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Is that Alex? Is Alex in the room?
I don't believe so.
Okay. Okay. This is South Carolina. Who we got here?
Yeah, Ronan.
I'm still on the line.
I don't know if Atlanta's been muted or not.
How is Alabama still around?
Pretty sure. Oh, this is a very spirited discussion.
Well, it beats the alternative. We could sound like PBS.
Yeah, but
Yeah,
you're definitely right. We need these conversations. It's just too often everyone talks at each other instead of to each other. And once everyone gets out of their feelings out of certain things, I think we can be well on the way to where we need to be.
Well, fortunately, I don't have an ego to inflate or bruise. The only thing I'm concerned about is black empowerment. As long as we do that, I'm totally unconcerned about the means. I'm not really concerned how we get there. I don't care about getting credit for it. It doesn't bother me whatsoever. I mean, you know, I posted this up before where I reminded people that when you take a look at government, you have, they call them two political parties, but it's really two sides of the same party is what it is.
Yeah.
Because you don't see either one of them. All they ever argue about is whether government should be 8 feet tall or 6 feet tall. They never argue over whether government should be gone. They just argue over who gets to hold the knife when they cut the pie and how large the pie should be this time or how much we should spend on a pie. They never argue over whether or not there should be one and whether or not they should be the only two who get to cut it. They never, ever argue over that. And that's the way power works. Somebody mentioned before about, you know, what was right and what was fair. Well, guess what? I'm not interested in what's right and fair. Shocking. I don't care about what's right and what's fair. You see, when it comes to empowerment, you get to define the terms right and fair. I want to be in the empowered position because guess what? The dominant culture has been defining what's right, what's fair, what's legal. My God, we just saw a man get acquitted for murdering a 17-year-old child and admitting
and
that
celebrity.
And be called a celebrity. So don't come at me talking about what we're supposed to, what's right and what's fair and whatnot. What you get empowerment, and you'll get to get the dictionary and define it for yourself. And what I'm saying is get your people in a position where you can do that, because I'm tired of the situation where we're telling each other, let's all go to school to learn to be better poker players. Forget that. Just buy the doggone casino, and then you'll win every hand.
You want me to wait? You want me to go and buy the casino? Man, you can't. I can't buy the casino. You didn't mess up now.
I can get a check cash in place, but not no casino.
I do think that it is important for black people to kind of put themselves into that position. One of the things which always kind of distresses me is that black people are probably the only ethnic group in the United States which completely depends on the government to educate its children. And I don't even mean just reading, writing, and arithmetic. I mean educate as in learn all necessary skills which will allow them to sustain themselves and take care of their families. Nobody else depends on the government like that. And the government has failed us repeatedly, yet we continue to do it.
Well, we love the government.
When I was driving through Philadelphia, I was driving up to Horsham. And when I was driving to go back up to Horsham, I passed on the right-hand side of the street. I forget where it was exactly. But I passed there were like two or three of them in a row. It was a Jewish synagogue with a Jewish school and daycare connected right next to it. And there were like two of them in a row. And what I was saying is, do you understand what this means? This means that they're not leaving it up to anybody else to provide their spiritual training, to care for their children, or their educations. They're taking care of all that themselves. They're not going to leave it up to anybody else to be responsible for whether that succeeds or fails. And they don't trust you to take care of that for them. They're going to do that on their own.
Now, listen,
that's
listen.
I gotta,
hold on. Guys, me and Jason got to spar for a minute. When you tell people, when you tell people that you need to educate your children, I mean, I don't have children because I don't have time for kids. I'm serious. I'm not married.
Okay.
And I believe that when you have children, your life is no longer your own, but you begin to pour into your child, and you make that child that you train up that child, and you spend time with that child. And if you cannot feed and put the time into that child, you don't need to have them. That's what I was taught. That's what I believe. But I look at what we have today, and when it comes to, you know, training up our children and getting an education and doing all of this, where in the world are we going to stop just having babies to have babies, depending on the government to feed the babies, to take care of the babies, and start cultivating these children and training these children and putting a self-worth inside of them? Because if not, we're just on a hamster wheel.
Yeah, the reason that you have – there's a reason why people like me, Dr. Anderson, and other people we were talking to in our documentary, there's a reason why Malcolm X, Marcus Garvey, all of them said it's everything starts with economics. The reason that it starts with economics is because economics, mastering your economy, mastering entrepreneurship and business is the only skill, the only discipline that requires you to master everything else. You can master spirituality and you will still drop dead from starvation if you can't get a meal. You can master education and you will still drop dead from starvation if you can't get a job with that education. If you master business, you will never go hungry, no matter where on earth I put you, because you've mastered all the other characteristics that you need. The other thing that you master is a value of legacy, because I built up this thing. I built this. Because I built it, I value it. The world values it. And because it's something valuable, I want to make sure it survives, but I'm not going to live forever. So the reason why people who build businesses have children is because they value the business and they need someone to pass this on to. But we in black society, guess what? Who are the men who don't own anything or build anything? Oh, yeah, that's black men. And who are the ones who don't care who they're having children with or leaving them with? Because I ain't passing nothing on, so what does it matter? What does it matter if I have kids with Shibibuku or Bushika or Shandalika or Chandelira or whatever? Because I'm not passing anything on. I'm not leaving anything for these kids. So what does it matter? I've got nothing to lose. And we as black men, if we actually had something to lose, we take it more seriously. You look at your wallet and the lifestyle you're living, you look at it a little more, you got a little sharper eye about who you leave around you when you right. got something to lose. But when you got nothing to lose, you don't care who you have kids with, you don't care what part of town you live in, you don't care who you get arrested by, you don't care if you get into fights with them, you don't care about any of that, because all you got is you and the clothes on your back, and even the house you live in was given to you with a government voucher. You've got nothing to lose.
And that's dangerous.
Economics is the foundation of everything. And I can prove it scientifically, mathematically, and statistically. I talk about it endlessly. I focus my life on it and given my life to it because it is the cornerstone. It is the linchpin that holds everything else together. And we've tried to teach ourselves that we can live in a world that runs exclusively on money, and somehow we're going to survive without it. And we don't realize that it holds everything else together. Everything, your churches, your institutions, your roads, because it was the efforts and what you had to do to make that money that will cultivate the other personal characteristics within you that will hold the society together. You're not going to do it because it's, quote, the right thing to do. That's not the way human nature works. And we don't want to face that reality.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with that. One of the things that always distresses me is how people try to juxtapose money and character as if those things are just completely separable things. The only times when you have money and character being very separate is when you have a scenario of organized crime. But when you have people who are working within a community, the people within a community who have the most money are going to tend to have the character attributes that allow them to earn it.
Thank you.
And they're going to do any and everything to keep the detractors out of it. Anything that threatens.
Well, but that's a But that's the way that power works. I've said this for years now, and I will say this here on this broadcast. Power is not inclusive. Power is exclusive. Power does not respect weakness. Power only respects power and those who can give it more power and bring more power to the table. And that's it. Remember when the housing crisis started, you had seven major investment banks. Today, you got four. And the ones who are still surviving are bigger than they've ever been. Why? By knocking off the four who are at the table. Power is not inclusive even among the powerful. It's exclusive because the fewer people who have power, the more the remaining people with power are powerful. And we as black people have told ourselves that we'll get our pie in the sky and heaven in the hereafter and money isn't everything and the Lord will provide and everything else. We've done everything except say, you know what, let me get some empowerment and see how that works out for me. Napoleon was once asked, on whose side is God? And Napoleon answered, God is on the side of the strongest battalion. We'd be good to actually start dealing in the real world as opposed to fantasies.
Well, Jason, since you mentioned that and you talk about Christians, a lot of us tend to be hypocrites because if you go back to the book that you hold so dear and take cliff notes from, faith without works is dead. So whatever happened to the faith of your economics and yourself? And you're just sitting there and expecting someone else to sit there and look out for your best interest when they don't.
Selective readers of the Bible ever, we just rip out the pages that we want to, and we actually cut those pages up after we rip them out, and we just discard the rest. We read only the parts that reinforce what we want to believe. Black people have become comfortable. Yes, I will say it. Black people have become comfortable with our third-class citizenship. We've become comfortable with it. We are perfectly comfortable driving a used car for the rest of our lives. We're perfectly comfortable living on Section 8 and welfare the rest of our lives. It's not the government offers it to us. It's that we have become comfortable with it. White people are not comfortable with a third-class citizenship. Asians are not comfortable with that. Arabs are not comfortable with that. We are the only people who have become comfortable in this subservient, impoverished condition. And that's why what we're doing now... The simple word, the idea that you should be comfortable with that is essential.
But then have the audacity to complain about the condition of them being comfortable. That's why I tell people, never let your comfort zone become your coffin.
Well, see, here's the one other thing that I'll say about to those that are believers that are listening. God said, Jesus said, occupy till I come again. And occupy means to be a invading force in the land. It doesn't mean to just sit back and relax and don't do anything. It means to be an invading force. And the thing is we're not being any kind of a force, and that's why we are hypocrites. That's why you do have milquetoast teaching, and you have milquetoast pastors that don't stand for anything, but as soon as somebody wave a dollar bill in front of many of their faces, they bow down to that dollar bill and lead you down a path of bondage again. You shouldn't be bound, and we are more bound than any other in this country.
Yeah.
Well, people like to say that it's easier for a camel to get through the eye of a needle than the rich man to make it into heaven. Well, to that, my response is, those pearly gates didn't pay for themselves. So maybe I need a contractor's job.
And none of the Bible characters that did anything were poor. Not a one.
No.
Jesus was not poor.
Money can't buy happiness. They're correct, but it makes a heck of a down payment. So I'll see the best I can do.
Well, it says money answers all things. So, I mean, they don't want to read everything. Money answers all things.
Listen, I want to thank you, Jason, again. You'll come back and hang out with us again?
Sure.
Listen,
It may be a week or two, but
that's all right. We've been doing it 7 years, and I don't plan on going anywhere anytime real soon, because I'm at the end of my show. Now I'm going to leave the show open so you guys can talk for the next hour. It's recorded, but you guys can continue the conversation. I will be off the air, and we will go to the next program that's coming on terrestrially. But you guys can stay on and talk as long as you like. Jason, again, I want to thank you. You've been listening to Tracy and Friends here on WSOM AM 600. The number here is 347-945-5229. We do this every day, Monday through Friday from 9 until noon.
on 600 WSOM at TracyandFriends.com, blogtalk/TracyandFriends, or on iHeartRadio at WSOM. God bless you, Jeff. Thank you. Tomorrow, Sticks and I will be here. We'll be having a great conversation. We look forward to having you join us, and we'll see you then. Jason, again, thank you. God bless you, and have a good day. Say goodbye, Jeffrey.
Good night.
Jeez, old man.
Oh, Lord.
Well, I thank everyone for having me here. As soon as I have a chance, I'll definitely be sure to join you all again. And by all means, like I say, when we start broadcasting, join us over there at theblackchannel.net, and we'll definitely be glad to have any of you on, because we talk about these things in-depth all the time over there, so we'll definitely want you to join us.
Yeah, most definitely. Been looking to touch bases with you on a couple of things as well. I know you've been talking about promoting things as far as like Kickstarter and just overall in general, and being fresh into the entrepreneur game. I'm looking to surround myself and hopefully encourage other people to do so with those who are, you know, economically minded or business minded. That way we become better and stronger contributions to the community and abroad.
Well, like I said, I mean, it's a large subject because really it's like a college course, to be totally honest. Black people have to be educated about economics from the ground up. I use economics and socioeconomics as a placeholder name. I use it as a placeholder name for black empowerment, and I mean that across the board. If you want to empower yourself politically, educationally, media, academically, spiritually, financially, physically, it's going to start with your economics.
Yeah.
And that's why I talk about that so much, because that's going to be the fuel that powers everything else. You might be able to scrap out a meal in a day without economics, but it's going to be real, real hard. If you want to give yourself the best chance to accomplish all those things, that's where your economics are going to come into play. How much money you have is going to determine how well you can do those things. And not just that. If you are able to cooperate well as a group, you're all going to be wealthy. You show me a poor group of people, and I can show you a group of people who don't cooperate very well together.
Mm-hmm.
So money isn't their problem. That's the crazy thing. They think, well, we don't cooperate because we're poor. No. You're poor because you don't cooperate. That's why. There's a TV show called Boardwalk Empire, which talks about basically America in the 1920s in Atlantic City. And there was one guy in particular, Chalky White. He was a black gangster. And what we saw is that even though black folk were dirt poor, this man was making money. Well, how was he making money? Because he was able to put those pennies together. And what I'm saying is that even as poor people, if you will aggregate, in other words, if you will cooperate, then you can make some things happen. But if you are refusing to do that, if we got 10 of us saying, okay, let's cooperate, and 500 of us saying, but the new retro Jordans are coming out, then we got a problem here. We have a problem.
Yeah.
The problem is not that we don't have money. The problem is that we're not cooperating. That's the problem.
Yeah.
If we get together and I say, let's deal with black empowerment, and somebody sits up here and bursts into the room while they're driving to work on 95, apparently, and says, well, I'm not black, I'm American. Understand something. How are we ever going to come to a consensus if we can't even agree that we're black? Tell me how we're going to come to a consensus on anything else. What I'm saying to you is that if we can't agree on what we see in the mirror, if we can't agree to what we see on what we see in the mirror, how do you figure we're going to fix something as complex as social deficits? How do you figure that's going to happen? If we all have 50,000 definitions of what empowerment means, there's 40 million black people right now, and that means that we've got almost 40 million definitions of what black means, what empowerment means, what opportunity means. How are you going to make progress with this much divergence? 40 million special interest groups with their own separate agendas.
Well, I personally believe that there are people who are actually intellectually dislocated. And when I say that, they're dislocated as far as with their history, knowledge of self, and economics. They're very
wayward when it comes to things. I never understood why someone would pay $300 for a pair of shoes that took about $5 to make a pair each. And they don't see the value as far as, like, a business having children to raise and teach them how to do the business, just like everyone else does, and have something sustaining. I mean, like, everyone's trying to be rich and not understanding the benefits and the importance of becoming wealthy and teaching that to
Everyone is focusing on having the ability to purchase things. I don't think they want to be rich. I don't.
I agree.
Because a person who wants to be rich wants to have excess money in the bank. They want to have excess capital. These people want to be master consumers. They want to be their children in a candy store, and their children in a toy store, and they want to be able to put their hands on all the toys and bang on all the keys and all that stuff. But they don't want to have – that's a childish aspiration. They don't want to have an adult aspiration. An adult aspiration is, I can own this stuff, and I might tap one of the keys and whatnot, but I've got other things. I put these childish things to the side. And we as black people have this inherent socioeconomic immaturity in that we want to own things, because the truth is, and you know this, and I know this, and let's just be honest for a moment here, black people, and particularly I'm going to speak on black males because that's where leadership is going to come from, because men are the only ones who build. We lack self-esteem, and we don't realize or we refuse to accept that our lack of self-esteem comes from the fact we haven't built anything. If we had actually built something, we wouldn't have this gap in our self-esteem. But we have this gap in our self-esteem because we haven't built anything. We are not doing what men are supposed to be doing. And this is why we complain about TV shows like Scandal and whatnot. Well, how many black men are qualified or able? And when I say qualified, I mean have the finances, you have an infrastructure in place, can you even do this? How many black men are able to give Kerry Washington a starring role on TV? Tell me. Now, if you can't do that, why are you complaining about the white guys who can? If you can't give her a starring role, why are you complaining about the white guys who did it? And we can talk about anything you want to. You can complain about Beyonce acting a fool now on her records like she is. Well, who is she beholden to? She's not beholden to black men with some sense. She's beholden to economic pimps and vultures. And she's giving herself to the highest bidder because they can give her opportunities that you can't. So she figures, well, you know what? I'll be scandalous, but I'll be scandalous in a hospital room that costs, what was that? $50,000 a day for that special luxury suite. I didn't even know hospitals came with a luxury suite. That was news to me. But I never heard of that.
Well, that was crazy.
I didn't hear about her pregnancy, but guess what? We know they got them now. And understand something. She knew about it before we did. So what does that really tell you?
Yes, indeed.
Yeah.
Kind of tells you.
It means they were keeping it quiet when other people were doing it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Besides when you have money, you have access to certain inroads that most people have no knowledge of or even have the ability to go through.
Exactly.
And you got to have money to do anything.
With my bank, what they do, the bank calls me. And they send me all these letters and stuff. I mean, I used to just get the standard statements, and they send out the credit card thing. But I get two solicitations, and they all say my name on them. I mean, these are things I get telephone calls from because they offer me things. You see, when you open up a business account, the bank calls you.
Mm-hmm.
This is basic economics. People are not taught. Young black men are not taught this. They're taught to open up a checking account, and the first thing he does is go buy some clothes. He's not taught how to utilize money to better your life. He thinks that bettering his life, well, you use money to buy stuff. No, sir, you use money to make money so that you get to a point that the money you spend doesn't matter. Now, since you all are a group of educated fellows on this phone, I want to ask you a question. This came up during the last presidential election. How much money does Mitt Romney make in a day?
Woo! You know, I do not recall that, but I would imagine that it has to be a quite substantial amount.
Okay. About
a couple million, maybe. About a couple million.
Okay. Mitt Romney retired from Bain Capital about 10 years ago. He's basically been unemployed since then. He's been just living off of the investments and everything he made at Bain Capital, and that's basically it. Mitt Romney makes $50,000 a day. Do not believe me. This came up in the last presidential election, but don't believe me. Go look it up online for yourself. The stories are all over the place. Don't believe me. Either I'm right or I'm wrong. Either I'm accurate or I'm not. He makes $50,000 a day. What does that mean? He makes more money than most of the people who heard this broadcast are going to make in a year before the broadcast was over.
Right.
Yeah.
Amen. What I'm saying, what I'm telling you is that if you're not aspiring to that, then you're not talking, you don't want to be rich.
No.
Yeah.
This is
I
a man,
absolutely agree with that.
This is a man who can afford to buy Cadillacs like you buy tennis shoes. He can afford to do it if he wants to. He owns, what, 4 or 5 houses? And not
yeah.
when I say houses, what I really should be saying mansions, what I should be saying. And his wife was
yeah.
talking about, yeah, I can only get 2 Cadillacs in the mansion up in the Hamptons. And they were sitting there, the media was sitting there looking there like, are you serious? Did you really just say that? In a
yeah.
country where, you know, the class has evaporated. And what she's letting you know is, oh, baby, my husband stacks it up deep. He stacks it up deep.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
the average black male has champagne dreams. But is he putting in the work necessary to acquire that? And no, he's not doing it. And why isn't he doing that? Because we talk this double speak. If you're going to go for it, go for it. And if you're
yeah.
not, shut up. But I don't hate on Rick Ross. I'm talking about the rapper, not the jugular. But I don't hate
yeah,
on Rick Ross. I don't care if I said, dude, get it. It's out there. I mean, he said it in that song, Magnificent. I would always tell my people, but ain't nobody listening. Dude, you ain't going to be a corrections officer your whole life. Is that really what you're aiming for? He said, man, it's out there. I'm going to go get it. 50 Cent, get rich or die trying. That's a young man who was serious about it. And today, does he even make albums anymore? He's too busy investing and getting money off Coca-Cola. Please. That's what I'm talking about. And you have to keep that in mind because the first thing that Negroes will say when I say what I just said is, well, why do I need to have that much money? Because the ceiling is going to define where the floor is. Let me say that one more time in case anybody missed it. The ceiling defines where the floor is. Money is not a universal constant. The
yeah.
richer that the people at the top rich, the richer that the people at the top get, the more the price of things are going to alter for those at the bottom. And
yeah.
if you're saying I'm going to
put
a nice little pebble myself at the bottom, while the people at the top go from being billionaires to trillionaires, and you're still making thousands of dollars a year when these people at the top, their income, and mark my words, over the course of this century, we are going to see our first trillionaire. Now, we all might not live to see him. But over the course of the next 100 years, you're going to have your first trillionaire. Understand that. And when that occurs, the people at the people whose income is expressed in thousands will be paupers. And I'm talking about people who are making $100,000 today. Why? Because I don't know how many of you have been to Manhattan, if any of you have. Well, I've been to Manhattan. You'll see Manhattan in my documentary. I've been to Manhattan. I've been to Madison Avenue. When you go through, for example, the Holland Tunnel, now there's like 3 or 4 ways to get to Manhattan, but they're all tunnels. You have to pay to get in. It's a toll booth. $13 it cost me just to get through the toll booth to go into Manhattan. I'm already in New York City, but to go from where I'm at to Manhattan Island to get through that tunnel, $13. Do you understand what that means? What that means is they have erected an economic barrier between, and when you come out of the Holland Tunnel, you're essentially heading towards Madison Avenue, the most expensive real estate in the world, not just in New York, but the world. And they put up an economic barrier. What that means is that you can't get into Manhattan if you don't have money. Even if you, quote, live there. Where else is in Manhattan? Oh, yeah, Harlem. So what they've done is, and what's being gentrified faster than anything else in Manhattan? Harlem.
Harlem?
Without money.
people who said, it doesn't matter if I'm as rich as, because if you go straight up Madison Avenue or Park Avenue, for those of you who've been there, anybody who lives there, know I'm telling the truth. You go straight up Madison or you go straight up Park, you'll end up in Harlem. So for the people who are saying, well, it doesn't matter what those people down in Madison are doing. It doesn't matter what those people down there on Park are doing. That doesn't matter to me how much money they make. Understand, the money down there on that end is what's gentrifying you on this end. So you just keep telling yourself that it doesn't matter how poor I am. You do you, let me do me. We got a story right now of a young man in New York. I forget his name off the top of my head, but he was a young man and he was made homeless. Now this white fella came along and has been teaching him JavaScript so he could become a computer programmer. And basically it took him like a month or two to be able to do that. And he's learned the basics. But the beginning of the story is what I look at. The young man had a job. He was working for a Fortune 500 company. Well, his building got gentrified. That happened. Well, his building got gentrified. His building got gentrified because they had built this multi-million-dollar condominium complex across the street. Across the street.
Drove up the property taxes.
They did that. They increased the rent in the building I was living in because the condos across the street, they were giving those out for like $3,000 and $4,000 a month. So guess what happened to his rent?
Yep. That guy's name, by the way, is Leo Grand because I bought that out.
You're absolutely correct. Leo found out that you don't have to leave where you're at for that to occur. And even if you're a property owner, as you mentioned earlier, when they build a complex like that, what's going to happen to your property values? Well, I still live in the same raggedy house. Doesn't matter. The property value of the area and the region has increased. Well, my house has, but if you tore your house down, a new one would be worth, well, you can't tear it down. Well, guess what? We're valuing your land based on its potential, based on its value. And black people are not taught basic economic terms such as value, interest, loan, investment. We aren't taught what the true meanings, of basic terms like that are. We're not taught the true meanings. That's the problem that I have.
That's true. But I think that gentrification thing, too, we're going to see a lot more of that in pretty much every city, because for one of the first times in history, when it comes to black people, between the liberals and the conservatives, we are coming to something of a singularity, a coincidence of wants. What we have is that we have the law and order types who kind of want to clean up these urban areas and get rid of the welfare cases and all those people and push them out. But now we also have the left, the liberals, who want to have these centralized environments where everything can be green and everything is within walking distance. So we're having a coincidence of wants. We're going to see a lot more of this, and it's going to be a unified front between the left and the right, and black people will not have any allies whatsoever except for themselves.
What happens is you have people who are comfortable enough to call you the N-word to your face, and then you have those who just treat you like it. And what we as black people need to understand is that neither one of those sides has our best interest at heart. They each want to see how they can use you. The people on the so-called left want to use your vote. The people on the right want to use you to fund the prison industrial complex and corporate America to make you mindless consumers. None of them. The real question is, which one of them is interested in black empowerment? Which one of y'all is interested in that? And when you start questioning them, you realize that neither one is actually interested in doing that. Well, how do you know that? Because take a look at what they got and take a look at how they got it. And then ask them, which one of y'all is doing the same thing for us? Affirmative action is not economic empowerment. Having easier access to a job that's a nice foothold, I'll take that for the time being. But he's not coming to you talking about investment. He's not coming to you talking about that because he knows that's real empowerment. Investment is what will give you ownership and control. And that's the part of the conversation he's going to make very careful to steer around. We're not going to discuss what you own and control.
We're at the top of the food chain. We own and control it. We are not going to engineer a system whereby which you will become our direct competitors. The new FUBU shoes are out now for $100. Wouldn't you like that a lot more? Dr. John Henry Clark said it best. They have engineered a system whereby which you can live in peace and harmony so long as you eternally accept the position of being second place. As long as you leave them that top slot, you will be perfectly comfortable with them. This is how we get terms like black conservative, black Republican, and black Democrat, by the way. That's how you get those terms, when you become comfortable with your second place position. Now, you have a mixed president in the White House right now, but please tell me, this, when was the last time that man said the word black? He'll talk about gay marriage. He'll talk about illegal aliens, people who aren't even citizens and aren't even supposed to be on the land. It's illegal for them to be here, and he's got more interest in doing for them than he does for black people. He won't even mention our names. Please tell me what's the difference between him and Lyndon Johnson. The difference between the two of them is Lyndon Johnson actually did something for black people. Oops, but I'm not supposed to say that. When you get focused on empowerment, everything else comes together.